Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
This program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Left Channel.
Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News. I'm Lou Miliano. It's over, then again, just beginning. The House resolution on the president's surge of troops. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss says the House passed it overwhelmingly this afternoon, 246 to 182.
Democrats brought to power in large part by voters angry about the Iraq war say this is an important vote. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
It's a bipartisan, non-binding resolution that should send a very clear and firm message to the President of the United States.
A message that the solution in Iraq lies in political and diplomatic efforts, not more American troops. Republican Roy Blunt sees it differently.
This non-binding resolution is the first step in an all-too-binding spiral toward defeat.
No one expects President Bush to listen to Congress on this, but Democrats warn if he doesn't, they'll start putting conditions on bills funding the war. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The White House reaction said lawmakers were gambling on failure in Iraq. Meanwhile, the president's health was being dealt with at the White House.
In what a spokesman describes as a routine procedure, two small moles were removed from the president's left temple. The tissue will be analyzed, but White House physician Dr. Richard Tubb believes they are completely benign or non-cancerous. The spokesman says it took only 5 minutes for a dermatologist to administer a local anesthetic and remove the moles. We're told President Bush will have a scab at the site of the biopsy for about a week to 10 days. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
Big apology from Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell today on what motorists went through since Wednesday on I-78. Miles of stranded drivers, the guard being called out to rescue people, deliver baby formula, roads closed.
There were significant mistakes in judgment made and significant breakdown, almost a total breakdown in communications between state agencies.
Rendell said the state's handling of the storm and traffic backup was totally unacceptable. Was this Anna Nicole Smith had a will? Attorneys for her attorney boyfriend, not so legal husband, and maybe yes, maybe no father of her daughter, says she did. Mark Steinis is a correspondent with Entertainment Tonight.
One thing that comes straight in the face of this is Virgie Arthur, Anna Nicole's mother, her attorneys are stepping up saying this document isn't legal, it was never filed in court. But it is to our understanding that you don't need to file a will as long as it was legally executed for it to be a legal document.
Legal or not, the will puts all of Smith's stuff into a trust Howard K. Stern will control for her, their daughter. Commerce Department's reporting a dramatic drop in the construction of new homes and apartments last month, a drop of over 14%, putting construction at the lowest level in nearly 10 years. The larger-than-expected drop in housing starts gave Wall Street a mixed performance today. The Dow closed at 12,767.5, a 2.5-point gain. This is CBS News.
No doubt about it, the Internet is a great place to hang out. Like blogging, for example. I love to blog. Maybe too much, when I think of all the hours I blogged. Anyway, you've probably spent a lot of time on the Internet, too. Isn't it time the Internet paid you back? Just 15 minutes at GEICO.com could save you hundreds on car insurance. Now that's what I call payback.
Go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
My name is Leslie, and I've been smoke-free for 6.5 months.
Quitting smoking is hard, but millions of people have succeeded.
My name is Brad, and I've been smoke-free for 15 months now.
If you decide to quit smoking, visit Quit Assist, a free resource that links you to a wealth of expert quitting information, including websites, guides, quit lines, and more. It could help you find your own way to success.
My name is Etta, and I have been smoke-free for 4 years.
Quit Assist, a free information resource. Log on at philipmorrisusa.com.
Does who slept here mean something to you? Want an historic house? In Minnesota, WCCO reporter Steve Murphy says Walter Mondale's old place is on the block.
The future vice president lived in the 19th century parsonage in tiny Elmore, Minnesota, back in the late 1930s and 40s. The current owners bought the home in 2003 for $15,000, spent the next 3 years fixing it up, and placed it on eBay with an opening bid of $50,000. Mondale wishes them well.
They called me and said they were going to do it. It's a lovely little home, and I hope it sells.
Mondale never lost his attachment for the house, even launching his 1984 presidential campaign from the back porch. Steve Murphy, CBS News, Minneapolis.
It's getting up in years, maybe it's time to hang up the headdress. The University of Illinois says the school's mascot, Chief Illiniwek, will perform his last dance this month. The chief is 81. I'm Lou Melegano, CBS News.
Are you as frustrated?
New rule, stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it, because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Studios in New York City. Live. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
I'm going to drink a lot of beer and stay out all night.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Friday, the 16th of February, 2007, 6 minutes past the hour. Coming up on the show this hour, a look at some of the stranger arguments used on the House floor during the debate over the war in Iraq.
Get it on.
Yep, that's one of the arguments made today on the floor of Congress. We'll have more on that in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, we'll check in with California Congressman George Miller about what the House Democrats plan to do now. They said all along that this non-binding resolution was a first step. What happens next? Plus, I'll tell you which legendary country music singer has a new public crush on Hillary Clinton. It's all coming up this hour. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show, with news from Iraq and life during wartime. Of course, the big American news about Iraq today is that passage in the House of the resolution voicing support for the troops and distaste, non-binding disapproval, for the recent escalation of our involvement in Iraq. The vote was 246 to 182. 17 Republicans sided with almost all the Democrats. I will have more on that in just a moment. I will tell you who the two Democrats were who did not vote for the resolution. We've also got a live interview coming up with Congressman George Miller of California. But meanwhile, in Baghdad, the Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki declared victory in Baghdad, sort of, kind of. At least he said that the new Baghdad security effort has been, quote, a brilliant success. Wow. In contrast, one spokesman for U.S. forces in Baghdad, Major Stephen Lamb, said, quote, it's really too early to say if this is going to be a success or a failure. In any case, the number of civilians found dead overnight in Baghdad was unusually low. Only 10 corpses in the Baghdad morgue this morning. Another American officer, Major General Joseph Phil, who's the commander of the multinational division Baghdad, says, yeah, that's kind of what you might expect when you announce a big temporary security crackdown.
There's no question about it that many of these extremists are laying low and watching to see what it is we do and how we do it. How long that will last, we don't know.
Major General Joseph Phil, the commander of multinational division Baghdad. Nevertheless, Prime Minister Maliki had a secure video conference with President Bush today in which he touted the brilliant success of the Baghdad plan thus far. follow-up for you now on that story we learned about last night, yesterday actually, during the show, about the foiled airline hijacking in the Canary Islands. Remember the story? Here's Chuck Roberts on CNN.
The passengers and crew of the Air Mauritania flight are safe after a man walked on board with two pistols and tried to take it over. In fact, he did take over the plane. Turns out the pilot, though, managed to foil the plot by speaking French.
By speaking French. Let me explain. Imagine you are the pilot of this plane. It's a Boeing 737. You've got 71 passengers on board and 8 crew. Somehow, this hijacker guy manages to get on board the plane with 2 loaded pistols. He's holding one of the guns to your head, demanding that you fly the plane to France so he can try to get political asylum. You tell him that you don't have enough fuel to get to France, but you will fly him to the Canary Islands, which is where you're scheduled to fly anyway. While you're negotiating with this hijacker guy with the 2 guns, one of which is pointed at your head, you realize, hey, this guy doesn't speak French. Now, this is an Air Mauritania flight. Mauritania was a French colony until 1960. And you know, as the pilot on this flight, that most of the crew and the passengers will speak French, but this guy doesn't. That means you effectively have a code. As the pilot, you're approaching Gran Canaria. You calmly get on the public address system on the 737 and say, in French, hey, our hijacker doesn't speak French. Here's what we're going to do. Women and children, go to the back of the plane for your own safety. I'm going to brake really hard when I land the plane. And then immediately after I do that, I'm going to accelerate. That should knock the guy down. Then you guys jump him. He says this over the public address system in French to everybody on the plane. Sure enough, the hijacker guy was standing in the center aisle of the plane. When the pilot landed as hard as he could, the force of the landing and then the acceleration afterwards knocked the guy down and knocked one of the pistols out of his hand. The flight attendants, the amazing flight attendants, leapt. They were totally prepared for that eventuality, and they threw a pot of boiling water in his face from the coffee maker. And then 10 passengers who were all ready to go, who knew the plan, jumped on him in the aisle and beat the out of him. And that's the way hijackings are foiled. Concerted efforts by heroic pilots and or flight attendants and or passengers. And, you know, I know that Department of Homeland Security is fully tumescent over the idea of making sure that pilots all have guns in the cockpit. This is the big American idea for airline safety, guaranteeing at least one loaded weapon on every flight. But that brilliant idea has yet to foil a hijacking. Air Mauritania, the Richard Reid flight, remember that, the shoe bomber guy? And, of course, United Flight 93. Have shown us how it can be done without the added risk of making sure that there are loaded weapons on every plane in the sky. And now, it's time to celebrate.
And now, Air America celebrates birthdays of the right wing.
Happy, happy, happy birthday. Happy, happy, happy birthday, right wing.
Today is the 65th birthday of the only dictator brave enough to pair platform shoes with a belted jumpsuit. Happy birthday, Kim Jong-il. Let me just read you the lead paragraph from the Deutsche Press article about Kim Jong-il's 65th birthday today. I would paraphrase, but there's literally nothing I can do to improve on this poetry. This is from Deutsche Press. Quote, North Korea on Friday marked the 65th birthday of its leader, Kim Jong-il, with dancing and warnings of possible aggression from the United States. End quote. Two great things that go great together. Dancing and warnings of foreign aggression. It's like a Toby Keith concert. The dancing in this case happened in the central square at Pyongyang. Thousands of identically dressed dancing couples moving in lines in unison like they were on the greatest, most oppressive Asian foosball table in the world. And for a special birthday treat, Kim Jong-il's birthday, for that occasion, his government announced that they will distribute extra food rations this week. Wow, extra food. Now that is a benevolent dictator.
And so, Air America puts another candle on the right side of the cake.
Happy, happy, happy birthday. Happy, happy, happy birthday, right wing.
You know, over the years, Kent, we've probably played that like 10 times. I still can't hear it. It's
never not funny.
It's just
never.
It makes me sweaty.
Tom Johnson was never not funny either.
That's true.
And that's the man you hear.
God bless him. It's not like he's dead.
it's fine, but, you know.
He doesn't work here anymore.
No, but he we appreciate
it. It's just you, me, and Chris and Jackie, really. All right. Speaking of benevolent dictators and foosball, this isn't about foosball at all, actually. The New York State Legislature is considering a bill that would ban those hubcaps, those rims for your car that keep spinning even when you're not moving. New York State Senator John Sabini has introduced this bill, SB 1640, which I looked it up online in the official New York State legislative blah, 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 right? It would prohibit the use or sale of hubcaps, which contain parts designed to continue moving when the motor vehicle to which they are attached is not moving, end quote. Why? 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 I figured if you're going to be the anti-spinning hubcap state senator, you'd put your anti-spinner manifesto on your website or something, or at least a link to that great Chris Rock bit about it, you know? But still, up to a $750 fine for having big, shiny, spinning rims. Why? I don't know. Finally, speaking of approaches to law enforcement I don't quite understand, we need to talk for a second about the police in Kuala Lumpur. You know how it is, like we do every day on the show at this time. Actually, you know, today in Time Magazine, Kent, did you see this Time today? My new boyfriend, Richard Corliss, described this show as a beguiling version of Democracy Now! With animal sound effects.
Terrific!
Yeah, I think that's good.
Anything that has Democracy Now! And animal sound effects in the same sentence, very good.
We're beguiling.
There's one for you.
Thank you, Kent. But it is funny, like, while I was prepping the Malaysian Police Department story today, I kept thinking, God, am I really a lot like Amy Goodman? Amy Goodman punctuated by the growl noise and the monkey noise. And now, our daily police blotter from Kuala Lumpur. Anyway, he also called me a nonpareil, which is one of those big flat chocolate chips stuffed with candy bits.
This is all praise, by the way.
I guess.
Yes.
I am a candy Amy Goodman that oinks. That's me. That's our show.
Or he loves it.
Or he loves it. Yes. All right. Anyway, Malaysia. The Malaysian police have two big problems in Kuala Lumpur. Number one, gangs of illegal motorcycle racers. And number two, purse snatchers, particularly people who snatch purses while they're riding past purse wearers on motorcycles. Those are their two problems. Their solution? Prioritize. Put the motorcycle racers to work chasing the purse snatchers. They are, after all, very fast. The ruling party in Malaysia has proposed that for every 30 purse snatchers, the motorcycle racers catch and bring into the police. They go after purse snatchers. If you catch one, you bring them into the police. If you bring in 30 purse snatchers, the government will buy you a fancy new motorcycle to be a better motorcycle racer. And if that story was on Democracy Now! Today, I will poke myself in the eye with a fork. Now for more news and more animal noises, maybe, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter has sent back pictures of rocks in alternating layers of dark and light tones, and that can only mean one thing. There's water on Mars.
Oh.
Maybe. Once. Of course, if there's water, there could also be life on Mars. You know, again, maybe. Once. In the new issue of the journal Science, researcher Chris Akubo says these halos of light-toned rocks indicate areas where fluids have passed by. Probably water. However, if Akubo and his colleagues want to get more funding for their research, they should tell the Bush administration they found oil and Jesus.
Can't hurt.
When State Representative Scott Kelsch found out that no state had yet approved a resolution to honor U2's Bono for all his good works, Kelsch took it upon himself to sponsor just such a measure in the North Dakota House, of all places.
Wow.
Well, yesterday, lawmakers defeated his resolution 58-35. The House's main objection, and it wasn't those silly racquetball goggles he often wears, was that Bono had no connection to North Dakota. Just Google Bono and Fargo together and you'll see what I'm saying. Representative Gil Herbel, a Republican, said he initially thought the resolution referred to Sonny Bono. Herbel said, quote, "When I saw the resolution, I was looking for Cher's name in there," unquote. And this is why people under 40 need to start running for office now. Seriously, get on it. It's Bono. Later on Kent Jones Now, Ricky Martin tells President Bush, "Adios, stupido." Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. There had to be an animal noise there somewhere.
Had to be. I got more.
I know. We will be launching them later. under pain of bad publicity, apparently. It was good publicity. I know, it's good.
It's good.
It's good.
Totally good.
Must think of it as good.
Nonpareil.
19 minutes past the hour. It's the Rachel Maddow Show. We'll tell you who quoted Larry the Cable Guy while debating the Iraq War on the floor of the House today. Oh, my God.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Read Rachel's blog at maddowonline.com.
That unfamiliar sound is...
Change Bandit. Now give me all your change.
No, silly. Not like that.
Not like that.
No, just tell them how they can help by collecting the spare change from their friends, family, classmates, and co-workers. And donate to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. All from our good friends at the Sacramento Credit Union.
They can? And all they've got to do is go into the Sacramento Credit Union to find out how they can become a Change Bandit? Or they can log on to SacRadiothon.com? Well, why didn't you say so?
I just did, silly.
What is a miracle? A miracle described in the Webster's Dictionary is an extraordinary event manifesting itself in human affairs. You know, each and every day, miracles happen at the UC Davis Children's Hospital. And now, with your help, you can be a part of the miracle process as well. From now through February 24th, when you purchase a 9-piece miracle meal from KFC, $1 goes directly to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. Did you know that the UC Davis Children's Hospital is the region's only pediatric intensive care unit caring for over 60,000 children each and every year? That is why this year the KFC family is proud to have partnered up with the UC Davis Children's Hospital, part of the Children's Miracle Network, to help make sure miracles continue to happen. And now with the help of KFC's Miracle Meal, you can be a part of one too. So do your part and go to a participating KFC for a great meal today and help continue to make miracles happen with the KFC Miracle Meal. For more information on how you can continue to make miracles happen, log on to www.kfcmiraclemeals.com.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. News, analysis, and random animal noises.
Welcome back to the Rachel Maddow Show. It's 23 minutes past the hour. Thank you for joining us. We've got my live interview with George Miller, California congressman, proud liberal, very close ally of Nancy Pelosi, coming up in just a moment. We've got Patty Griffin in studio performing on the show. We've got important news about Hillary Clinton and legendary country music stars. That's all coming up on the show today. But first, it's time to wade into the old mainstream to see if there's any gold worth panning for among today's top stories.
Eureka!
Today's front page story is about Congress trying to stop the war. The vote today in favor of the House resolution against the escalation was 246 to 182. 17 Republicans crossed party lines to vote for it. Two Democrats crossed party lines to vote against it. The two Democrats who voted against the resolution were Gene Taylor of Mississippi and Jim Marshall of Georgia, two white Southern Democrats. Weirdly, you know, I was looking up the roll call today. On the Washington Post website, which is where I usually get the roll call, they now give you the roll call of votes, and your choices for how to see it are by yays and nays, of course. You can see the list by party, by state, by region, by gender, by boomer status, which I think means the age of the members of Congress, or, and this is my favorite, and I think it's new, you can see the roll call of how members of Congress voted on important legislation by astrological sign. The astrological sign most likely to vote for this resolution, most likely to say no to the escalation, were Leos. Leos voted for the resolution more than 2-1. The only astrological signs where people voted mostly against the resolution were Capricorn and Gemini, in case you care. Why is that information made available to us? George Miller is coming up in just a couple of minutes to talk about the resolution. He's a Taurus, apparently. But I do think, as we cap off this landmark mammoth week of debate in the House, that we consider some of the truly great arguments made by the Republicans who voted against the resolution. This week afforded a chance for every single member of the House to put forward their best argument for what we're doing in Iraq. We're barreling toward our fifth year there. Give us your best 5 minutes, your best argument. Give us your best argument, Ginny Brown Waite of Florida.
In the South, we have a wonderful saying, and it goes like this: get her done. Our soldiers want to get it done and come home, and our president wants the same thing. And this Congress should also demand the exact same thing. Let's get out there and get her done.
5 years of war, escalation, a country destroyed, region destabilized, 150,000 Americans in harm's way.
Get her done.
Thank you, Congresswoman, for that stirring, eloquent take on the matter.
Get her done.
Why didn't we think to ask Larry the Cable Guy in the first place? Even better, though, is this eloquent statement from Congressman Don Young of Alaska, who thinks that 246 members of Congress should be executed, hanged preferably.
I rise in opposition to H.R. 63, and I'd like to make a quote.
Make a quote.
Congressmen who willfully take actions during wartime that damage morale and undermine the military are saboteurs and should be arrested, exiled, or hanged. Abraham Lincoln. Who had the same problem this president had with a very unpopular war.
Republican Don Young of Alaska getting the whole Civil War thing right at last, kind of. One little problem with his quote, Abraham Lincoln never said that. Some dork-nose columnist from the right-wing Mooney paper, the Washington Times, made that up. And Don Young quoted it as if it was something Abraham Lincoln would have said. Don Young's spokeswoman says the elderly orator has no intention of apologizing for misquoting Lincoln and no plans to apologize for calling on members of Congress to be executed by hanging. Incidentally, Don Young is a Gemini. George Miller joins me next. It's The Rachel Maddow Show.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
It's The Randy Rhodes Show.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
If you will.
How small?
Sundays from 4:11 a.m. to 4:12 a.m.
Wow, that's eeny weeny.
I love rhymes.
Stop counting minutes. Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. For $40 a month, you get all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime. And there's no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8 for a store near you or buy online at MetroPCS.com. Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
Theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
In the Air America anchor chair, the host of the Rachel Maddow Show, Rachel Maddow.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us. Happy Friday. A judge in Italy today ordered 26 Americans, most of them believed to be CIA agents, to stand trial with Italian spies for kidnapping a Muslim cleric and flying him to Egypt, where he says he was tortured. The trial of the Americans will almost certainly be held in absentia, since Washington is not expected to hand them over. The trial will actually be the first criminal case over renditions, the Bush administration policy of kidnapping foreigners abroad and spiriting them away to secret locations in third countries where Lord knows what happens to them. In central Pennsylvania today, long sections of three major highways freeways remained closed after a monster ice storm and snowstorm caused a string of accidents and a horrifying 50-mile traffic jam on I-78. Lieutenant Stephen Ballor of the Pennsylvania State Police told the Associated Press today that road crews are still trying to melt the ice on Interstates 80 and 81 so they can reopen.
The Department of Transportation has graders out now, and then they also have chemicals they're putting down on the roadway to try and melt the ice. There's some areas where we have 3-4 inches of ice on the road.
4 inches of ice on the road. Pennsylvania's Governor Ed Rendell publicly apologized today for Pennsylvania's handling of the storm and the resulting traffic jam. It stranded hundreds of motorists for as long as 24 hours. The backup on I-78 was so bad that National Guardsmen in Humvees had to ferry food, fuel, and baby supplies to people stranded on the highway. Vehicles started getting stuck on I-78 around midday on Wednesday, but it took more than a day. It took until after midday yesterday for state police to close all the entrance ramps. So more people kept getting on the entrance ramps and joining the backup. Pennsylvania officials still have not explained why it took so long to close those ramps. And finally, a draft report being circulated at the Federal Communications Commission says that Congress could and should give the FCC regulatory authority over violence on television. The report suggests that Congress could make a law that would let the FCC regulate violent programming, much like it regulates sexual content and swearing on TV, presumably by barring it from being aired during hours when children might be watching. The FCC is expected to vote on whether or not to approve the report fairly soon. I'm not a big TV watcher, but you do have to worry about what, like, all the CSI shows would be about then, or like 24. They'd be about paperwork and hard thinking. And now Agent Jack Bauer conducts another heart-stopping Wikipedia search. You know, by a vote of 246 to 182, the House of Representatives today voted to oppose what the Bush administration would like us to believe is their big new strategy in Iraq, the escalation. As we all know, the resolution is non-binding, but given that this is the first time the war in Iraq has really been debated by Congress since the beginning of the war almost 4 years ago, it has to be considered as some kind of progress. What happens next is the big question. Joining us to give us some sense of where the Democratic-led Congress will go from here is the chairman of the House Democratic Policy Committee, Congressman George Miller, who represents the 7th District in California. Congressman Miller, it's good to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rachel. Nice to talk to you.
You must be happy about the overall result in the House, 17 Republicans joining with most Democrats to support the resolution.
Well, I think it's an important outcome. I think the fact that you had this big bipartisan vote against the president's policy to escalate the war is an important political statement. You now have a president of the United States that's insisting upon a policy in Iraq that is no longer supported by the people of the United States, now no longer supported by the House of Representatives in the United States, and the Senate may or may not take action tomorrow. And so I think what you start to see is a complete loss of confidence in this president's policy and the idea that somehow he can still win in Iraq when it's very clear from the generals, from the experts on the ground there, that the problems in Iraq are not going to be solved by our men and women in uniform. They've done all that they can do. It's now a political and a diplomatic problem that they simply can't provide the solution to.
That was one of the things that you mentioned in your speech on the House floor about the resolution. You said we've known for some time that Iraq now requires a political solution. What would be a political solution to the situation in Iraq?
Well, a political solution would be to stop the sectarian violence. But there's a great fear in the Sunni community that when the Shias are in complete control, if the United States leaves, that somehow the Shias will slaughter all of the Sunnis. I don't think that happens. I think much of the violence that you see is aimed at the United States because the United States is seen as an occupier. There will be violence after we leave, but there's violence today. There's a civil war today, and there will be a civil war after we leave. But there's not much more our troops can do to prevent that. There's just not much that they can do. And now we're sending in this escalation of some 21,000 troops. Once again, these troops have not been properly trained. They've not been properly equipped. You know, the General Schoonmaker said yesterday this was not adequately done for these soldiers. So again, the president's repeating history of what we saw 3 years ago that cost so many of our soldiers their lives.
Do you think that it's clear yet what the next step will be in the House of Representatives? I know that you're a close ally of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and she has said for some time now that this resolution, this non-binding resolution that's now passed, is the first step and that there will be additional steps taken. What do you see as being the next thing that will happen
in the
House?
The next step will play out. You know, the President has requested a supplemental of $100 billion to remain in Iraq, and Congressman Jack Murth, who's the chairman of the Appropriations Committee dealing with armed services, said that he's going to fence some of the money. He's going to prevent the president from using the money, certainly if these troops have not been properly trained and equipped for what they're being asked to do at this time, and make it very difficult for the president to carry out this escalation policy. I think that will find support. I don't know if that'll have majority support or not, but it's very clear the people of this country want the Congress to stop this war in Iraq and to bring these troops home. And what we've been asking for many, many, many months is a phased withdrawal and an exit plan to get our troops out of there and bring them home. Their job is done. They've done all that they can do. All that's happening now is the President of the United States is trying to use these troops to save a political legacy. They cannot win the war in Iraq for the Iraqis.
Do you, we've heard already from the Republican leadership, from people like John Boehner. Chris, you might have cut 17 there, Chris. Maybe you can pull it up for me for a second. John Boehner and other Republicans saying things like, almost daring the House of Representatives, almost daring the Democratic leadership to push the debate so that it's something, so that it is about funding, so that we start talking about restrictions on funding or altogether cutting off funding for the war. And they seem to be pushing for that as if it would be some sort of political liability for the Democrats. I just want to play you comments today from John Boehner.
Why don't we have the real debate and have the real vote and do it now? Let's get out of the shadow boxing. Let's get away from the non-binding resolution. Let's get away from the slow bleed. Let's just have the real debate that the American people want us to have and bring it to an end.
Congressman Miller, he's the minority leader now. John Boehner's the minority leader. You're frankly a more important voice in Congress than he is right now, just in terms of sheer influence. But I'd like to ask you just to respond to that allegation.
Well, that's just a bald attempt. You know, that's sort of a Karl Rovian approach. He thinks that he can define our patriotism and that somehow we will cower in front of that. It's very clear from this debate that we're very comfortable with our patriotism. We believe we're serving the troops. We're trying to save their lives. This president has had a lousy policy in the war in Iraq. This was a war he chose to fight. It was not a war of necessity, and it ought to be brought to an end. And in a couple of weeks, we will start our fifth year in Iraq. And this president has failed to have a policy that would work. But this war should have never been fought. And no matter what John Boehner says, that will change nothing in terms of how the American people feel about this war.
Congressman Miller, one last question for you. And as you know, we've seen a lot of saber rattling toward Iran from the administration. There was the mysterious anonymous military briefing in Baghdad, followed up by a lot of harsh words from the president himself and other members of his administration. If the White House ordered some sort of military action toward Iran, they ordered whether it was a bombing or a special operations action or something else, toward overt aggression toward Iran, what could the Congress do in response?
Well, the Congress could immediately cut off funding for that. I think, in fact, you're going to see an effort to require the president to get an authorization before he spends any money to do anything in Iran. I mean, this president, you know, is just what we don't need is another war. And certainly not with this group of people. They've been wrong about every facet of this war in Iraq.
Yeah.
They've been at every stage. They've cost us thousands of lives. They've cost us tens of thousands of wounded soldiers. And I do not believe this country nor the Congress will follow them to Iran if they're foolish enough to consider that.
I just keep hearing the voice of Dick Cheney, you know, saying, well, they can do whatever they want. They can't stop us. We'll do whatever they want. We'll do whatever we want. They have such an expansive view of the president's powers.
No, they have a view. They somehow think they're participating in a little dictatorship. This is a democracy, and the Congress has a very important constitutional role in this, and the Congress, I believe, will be fully prepared to exercise that if they have any visions of going to Iran.
Congressman George Miller, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Congressman George Miller represents the 7th District in California. He's the chairman of the House Democratic Policy Committee, a very influential member of the Democratic leadership in the House, a very close ally of Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And can hear from him, and it's refreshing for me to hear from him, that incredibly strong language toward the administration that they better not try something foolish with Iran, that Congress will be heard and will have influence and will exercise its constitutional responsibilities with regard to foreign policy and the use of the military in this country. Commander-in-chief just means that the generals report to you. It doesn't mean that you get to decide in a dictatorial fashion everything that happens with the United States military and the way we use our military to try to get our way around the world. It's 45 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. When we come back, we've got Kent Jones plus today's final front page story. Why does Rudy Giuliani need 5 hotel rooms anytime he travels anywhere? We'll ask that question and not answer it when we come back.
You're listening to the Rachel Maddow Show. Nerds, welcome.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
On Air America Radio.
The staff at UC Davis Children's Hospital.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
I just kept it real about Iraq, George Bush. He'd have had me at hello. He really would. If instead of trying to scare us that Saddam Hussein has a death ray, if he had just come out there and said, look, it's a Texas thing. They tried to kill my daddy. And I will never be able to sit down with my family again in peace until I have Saddam Hussein's head on a stick in the middle of Baghdad. Or as it's now known, the Galleria at Halliburton Square. Oh, you're good. You're good. That's why I came here.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio, speaking truth to power, making fun of idiots.
Welcome back. It is 50 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
The Rachel Maddow Show. Now, it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones. Now.
Hello, Dateline New York. Toy maker Fisher-Price said yesterday it is recalling 500,000 Laugh and Learn bunny toys. That's the yellow bunny with one green ear and one orange ear that has musical and counting sound effects. It turns out the pom-pom nose on the Laugh and Learn bunny can detach and pose a serious choking risk for small children. Certainly nothing funny about that, an important piece of consumer advocacy news. But just for a moment, consider the fate of the journalist at CNN.com Money who probably never dreamed he or she would have to write these next two sentences. Quote, only bunnies with three-dimensional pom-pom noses are included in this recall. Bunnies with flat or embroidered noses are not subject to this recall. Unquote. Laugh and learn, indeed. Rachel?
So it's the pom-pom noses that are the problem, but not the flat or embroidered noses.
It's the idea of the word bunnies and embroidered noses. This is all funny. I mean, it's a real story, and this is a real thing, but hilarious.
You know, that person probably has a very expensive journalism degree.
Like me, so yeah.
Exactly.
Hilarious.
Searching the thesaurus for a word other than bunny to use. Can I call it a rabbit? Would that make this less embarrassing?
No, can this I call is clearly it a... the laugh and learn bunny, okay? Get it right.
How about if I called it a hare? What about that? Could I call it a hare?
No.
All right.
You can.
Now it's time for one last trip with our old pal, the drunk prospector. It's not Al, the drunk prospector. He doesn't have a name. To find out if there's any further gold worth panning for among today's top stories, first story on the front page today was about how Republicans quoted Larry the Cable Guy accurately and Abraham Lincoln inaccurately while making their losing case for supporting the escalation in Iraq in the House of Representatives. That vote happened today. Now, the Senate tomorrow on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Is going to vote on this same resolution, or at least try to vote on this resolution, the same thing the House voted on, which says, we support the troops, we don't support the escalation. And the question is whether or not the Republicans are going to allow a vote to go through and stop filibustering this thing like they did before. So the second story on the front page today is about how all of this kerfuffle affects the race for the presidency in 2008. John McCain, most directly, is eager to be seen as far-sighted and straight-talking, particularly on Iraq. He's fearless on the issue of Iraq. He'll take unpopular stands. He's willing to put himself out there. He's willing to say he always believed stuff he clearly never believed before. John McCain has decided to very boldly not vote on this issue.
Oh, hey, good.
Yeah.
Nice.
He's
brave,
not going to show up.
John McCain, yeah. Not voting.
I think it's a bold move.
Yeah.
I'm going to not state my opinion on this.
You know what, Rachel? I'm not going to vote on this either.
Brave. Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Chris Dodd, even Mulla Sam Brownback, are all canceling campaign stuff and coming back to the Senate tomorrow to cast a vote on the war. But John McCain can't be bothered. He's too busy straight-talking his way through Iowa. Meanwhile, though, Hillary Clinton is getting an unexpected boost from a very, very unexpected supporter.
And I'm proud to be.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Merle Haggard.
You bet.
Has written a song called Hillary.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think he's recorded it yet. If he has recorded it, we couldn't find it anywhere.
And it's pro?
Well,
Hillary?
He's been playing at all his live gigs, and it includes the lyrics, the country needs to be honest, change needs to be large, let's put a woman in charge.
Yeah, Merle.
I don't know the tune, but I'm just guessing. and apparently he's getting a mix of cheers and jeers from his audiences.
I'll bet.
Yeah. But, you know, if it turns out that he's not being sarcastic, this could change the whole world. Merle Haggard and Hillary Clinton. Wow.
Sounds good to me.
One of my favorite presidential contenders developments, news developments of the day, is the SmokingGun.com posting Rudy Giuliani's speaking gigs travel writer online.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Man of the People not only gets $100,000 per speech, he also requires that whoever hires him, in addition to that fee, you need to fly him to his gig on a private plane. Not any private plane will do. It must be a Gulfstream 4 or bigger, or Rudy won't go. He also insists that he gets 5 hotel rooms, 1 2-bedroom suite, and 4 other rooms as well. And he also insists that there be no on-camera flashbulbs anywhere near him.
Mm.
which is an admirable effort, I think, at improving his pretty, pretty image in the press.
Yeah, and a bowl of green M&Ms. Yes. Only green!
Yeah, man. Also, I need a new facelift every 3 weeks. Anyway, if I were Giuliani, I would insist that the only images that could be produced of me while I'm out in public be drawn by the pointillist guy who draws the little headshots for the Wall Street Journal. I can only be drawn! Watercolors! Also, finally, in presidential politics, there's a big AP story today that's supposed to be great for Mitt Romney, all about how Mitt is lining up Jeb Bush's fundraisers and advisors in Florida to support him. But little Mitt, even in an article like that, every website that links to that story doesn't even mention Mitt Romney, because there's a parenthetical reference a few paragraphs into the story which says, just as an aside, that George W. and Poppy Bush have been urging Jeb to run for the presidency. It's not what the article's about, but every website that links to it, the link is W and Dad urging Jeb to run. Poor little Mitt.
Oh.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Iraq today is like the OK Corral or the Wild West, rife with private armies of contractors that answer to no one and operate under a veil of secrecy. But those days appear to be coming to an end. In the hot seat is the shadowy mercenary firm Blackwater USA. Last week, California Democrat Henry Waxman launched the opening salvo in Congress versus Blackwater. While it was a start, Congress needs to wheel out the bulldozers for some heavy digging. Blackwater has over $500 million in contracts, many of them no bid. The company's become nothing short of the Praetorian Guard for Bush's wars. The man behind this empire is Eric Prince, a secretive, multimillionaire conservative Christian who bankrolls the president and his allies. With 100,000 contractors in Iraq whose deaths go uncounted and crimes unpunished, Bush has used Blackwater and its mercenary allies to engage in a privatized surge behind the backs of the American people. If Congress does its job, the war industry should be facing a very long war.
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking, as in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
The AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's left channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
There has to be 7,000 to 8,000 people here. And nothing's moving.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. After 4 days of debate, the House voted 246 to 182 for the resolution expressing disapproval of President Bush's new strategy in Iraq. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss begins our coverage.
The House vote was definitive. Congress is now on record against sending more troops to Iraq. 17 Republicans joining Democrats in a message put succinctly by California's Henry Waxman.
We will not stand for more of the same.
Republicans warned the vote would undermine morale and encourage America's enemies, or in the case of Adam Putman, do nothing at all.
And all of this is for what? To send a message or settle a score with our commander-in-chief?
But Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi says voters in November demanded a change in Iraq.
This resolution today sets the stage for that new direction.
The next step after this non-binding resolution, trying to attach conditions to a bill funding the war that will be before Congress next month. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
White House.
Members of Congress are taking their own gamble here. They're gambling on failure.
Knowing the president would lose the vote, spokesman Tony Snow portrayed it in stark terms, even as he downplayed its significance.
This is, quote, a non-binding resolution. But what we're afraid of is that this is, in fact, going to serve as a precursor for cutting off our troops.
And that the president cannot permit. Snow says Mr. Bush stands by his Iraq strategy and will be very aggressive with Congress to get the funding for U.S. troops there. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
In the Senate, Democratic leaders have set a rare Saturday vote to put Republicans on the spot. The question is whether to proceed with debate on an Iraq war resolution. Now this.
Did you know your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury may be trying to tell you something? Just look at your oil change sticker or your odometer. They tell an important message, when to change your oil. And when it is time, be sure to visit your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer. Right now, the Works Fuel Saver Package is just $36.95 or less. That's a Motocraft synthetic blend oil change, tire rotation, fluid top off, multi-point inspection, and more. Just $36.95. And no appointment is necessary. Now that's convenient. Genuine Ford parts. Expert service. Low prices. We've got everything you need.
You need a hand, I can assure you this. I can help.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service. We're better. We're proving it. And we want you to be the judge. Hurry into your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer today. Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, and diesel vehicles extra. Disposal fee may apply. See participating dealership for service hours and details through 318.07.
It's the aftermath of the winter storm that hit the east on Wednesday. JetBlue still struggling to recover from its meltdown. Mario Dominguez is supposed to be in Fort Lauderdale tomorrow for his in-laws' anniversary cruise, but his flight out of Boston's Logan Airport was canceled.
This has been happening to people all day. They've canceled one flight after another. And then there's flights that are going out tomorrow, but they say that we can't be put on those flights because we can't bump the people that are on the flights tomorrow.
Dominguez says JetBlue offered him a refund, but no help booking him on another airline. In Pennsylvania, Governor Ed Rendell says it's totally unacceptable that sections of major interstates are still icebound. Trucker Debbie Skinner, stranded on I-81 in Pine Grove, is relying on the kindness of strangers.
They opened up the cafeteria for the high school and the gym, and they brought out cots and blankets for the other motorists, for the four-wheelers, as we call them. And they even allowed their animals, their dogs and stuff inside.
When reporters asked Dr. Z the other day, Daimler Chrysler chairman Dieter Zetsche refused to rule out a sale of Chrysler. Now, Automotive News reports there are high-level negotiations on a proposal for General Motors to buy Chrysler. Peter Brown is editorial director.
The talks are continuing, so, you know, you have to regard anything as possible. There's a lot of pressure on Daimler Chrysler from shareholders about the losses at Chrysler, and they don't want to eat those.
Chrysler announced a restructuring this week that will cut 13,000 jobs. Ray Evans, a legendary Hollywood songwriter, has died at 92. With partner Jay Livingston, Evans wrote some memorable tunes, including this big hit for Nat King Cole.
Mona Lisa, men have named you.
Evans and Livingston wrote the Christmas standard, Silver Bells, Doris Day's theme, Que Sera Sera, and the theme to the TV show, Mr. Ed.
A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the face.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
No doubt about it, the Internet is a great place to hang out. Like blogging, for example. I love to blog. Maybe too much. When I think...
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Live from our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Because it's Friday, you ain't got no job, and you ain't got to do.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Friday, the 16th of February, 2007, 6 minutes past the hour right now. Coming up on the show this hour, we ask the hard questions. For example... Can a good martini make you a better fisherman?
Fishy, fishy, fishy.
Certainly, a really good one can make the fish look bigger and prettier. We'll explore that in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, we'll talk with musician Patty Griffin about her great new album, Children Running Through. She'll perform here in studio. Plus, the next frontier in biowarfare, big balloons. It's all coming up on the show. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. On yesterday's show, you may recall I talked a couple of times about breaking news that we were getting during the show from CNN. CNN quoting a spokesman for the Iraqi Interior Ministry who said that Iraqi forces had wounded the head of al-Qaeda in Iraq. The big al-Qaeda in Iraq cheese used to be Zarqawi. Then after we killed Zarqawi, they named another guy to be the big cheese. His name was Abu Ayyub al-Masri. Now, the Iraqi Interior Ministry says, we did. We wounded him, we swear. And we killed his top aide. But the U.S. military today contradicted them. They said, A, we've never heard of this supposed top aide. And B, we don't really believe the Iraqis... when they say that they wounded al-Masri. Here's Sagar Magani reporting for the Associated Press.
The U.S. military says there are no indications al-Masri was hit. The multinational division Baghdad commander Joseph Fil says the terror leader remains a key target.
He knows very well that we are definitely after him.
He says al-Masri's death would have an impact on the network.
But we've also seen that they're able to rejuvenate leadership fairly quickly.
Al-Masri took over the group after Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's death in a U.S. strike last year.
The Sunni insurgent umbrella group to which al-Qaeda in Iraq belongs, it's kind of their guild, their Grange Hall for Sunni extremists in Iraq, they call themselves the Islamic State of Iraq. They sided with the U.S. in this debate today. They put up a posting on a militant website which says al-Masri has not been wounded. The statement said the Iraqi government was, quote, making up such news that have been denied even by their masters, the Americans. So was the head of al-Qaeda in Iraq wounded? I have no idea. Would al-Qaeda in Iraq just grow a new leader to replace him if he was wounded or killed or captured? Of course they would. If all of al-Qaeda in Iraq disappeared today in a giant terrorist bus crash or something, would things get one iota better in Iraq? Yes, they would get one iota better for 5 minutes. And there would still be a giant civil war, and there would still be Sunni insurgents and Shiite insurgents, and there would still be foreign fighters flooding into Iraq to fight the infidels. That's us. And U.S. troops would still have no military mission in Iraq whatsoever. So the mirror image of what the U.S. is saying about Iran is apparently happening in the Iran about us. Yeah, you're not really going to see this story widely yet, but I think it's kind of important. You know, this week the president and those mysterious anonymous military briefers and the presidential spokesman and flautist Tony Snow, all of these people in the administration, all of these people saying that these weapons, explosively formed penetrators, no less, are coming from Iran and they're being used in Iraq to kill our troops. In the international pages this week, you might have seen a buried story about a big car bombing inside Iran. Did you see this story? It was on Wednesday, and a car bomb blew up a bus that was operated by the Revolutionary Guards. Iran actually has two parallel militaries. It has its armed services, and it has the Revolutionary Guards. Why does Iran have two militaries, each with their own navy and air force? It's complicated. I'll tell you when you're older. Actually, I have no idea. I need more time to figure it out myself. But they do. They have two parallel militaries. So this bus blew up in Iran. It was targeting the Revolutionary Guards. 11 people were killed. Today, Iran announced 65 people were arrested in following up on that case. 65 arrests of men they say are linked to a Sunni extremist group, a Sunni terrorist group that claimed responsibility for that bombing. Now, the Iranian government says this Sunni terrorist group that claimed responsibility for the bombing also has links to the most famous Sunni terrorist group of all, and that would be Al-Qaeda. Iran also says that its Sunni Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist group also has links to us. Iran has arrested people who it says are Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists who killed people in Iran and who they say had training and got their explosives from the United States, from us. On the one hand, this is perfect and totally typical Iranian tit-for-tat propaganda. This is what they say. Oh, you think we're terrorists? We think you're terrorists. Yes, right. On the other hand, just, you know, if we thought that Sunni extremists could destabilize the Iranian government, would you put it past our government to work with Sunni extremists that they thought could get that done, even if those guys did have links to Al-Qaeda? I think that's an open question, as far as I'm concerned. As mentioned last hour by George Miller, Congressman George Miller of California, the outgoing Army Chief of Staff, Peter Schoomaker, told the Senate Armed Services Committee yesterday that the increase of troops in Iraq, remember they said there was going to be more than 20,000, turns out it's about 17,500 U.S. Army troops and the rest are Marines, remember? 17,500 of those troops are from the Army. And Peter Schoomaker, Chief of Staff of the Army, said yesterday to the Senate Armed Services Committee that that number is not the total number of Army troops he's expecting to have to send to Iraq to support this escalation.
The five brigades is only the big tip of the iceberg. That there's lots below that that we have to do, and we're even today getting additional requests for forces that continue to stress us.
He's referring there presumably to the surprise request from the president yesterday for more troops for Afghanistan. You know, that was the first time that Bush has given a speech on Afghanistan in his whole second term, and all of a sudden more troops, much to distract from what's happening in Congress. So the Army Chief of Staff, Schoomaker, says he is not satisfied with the readiness of our non-deployed forces. He's not talking about Iraqi troops. He's talking about American troops. He says the increased demands in Iraq and Afghanistan for American troops have aggravated that non-readiness, and he feels that the U.S. military is now in a dangerous period in terms of readiness. That was the direct quote, a dangerous period. Peter Schoomaker says he recently met with the Army Chief of Staff from China, and the Chinese Army Chief of Staff told him that China has been scrutinizing the readiness of American forces with interest. In response to this obvious burst of traitorous communism from the Army Chief of Staff, Republican Congresswoman Ginny Waite Brown said, thank you, Congresswoman. Here's something that you are not supposed to talk about in America. South America. The only way you're supposed to talk about South America in American media is to denounce the dangerous radicalism of Hugo Chavez. Very dangerous man. You're supposed to be boycotting Citgo and instead making sure all our oil money goes to Saudi Arabia for our national interest, because Hugo Chavez is very dangerous. That's the sum total of South America we're supposed to be able to handle, right? We're not supposed to talk about this. I want to try the impossible here. I want to try to add one more thought to our rich international news diet. The guy who Bush says is his closest ally in South America, the only sane leader in South America in a continent gone mad with leftist presidents and prime minister, is
Alvaro Uribe.
Alvaro Uribe, which I can't say very well today. Alvaro Uribe, the president of Colombia. He's supposed to be good. Hugo Chavez bad. Today in Colombia, five of Alvaro Uribe's closest allies in Congress, five members of Congress, five congressmen were arrested because of being linked to far-right militias in Colombia. Militias blamed for some of the worst massacres in Colombia's 50 years of civil conflict, and militias thought to be managing a pretty healthy proportion of Colombia's cocaine trade. But remember, you're not supposed to be able to absorb that. All you're supposed to know about South America is Hugo Chavez, bad. Finally, remember SARS? I hope someday that we look back on avian flu the way we look back now on SARS, as in something in the past that we used to worry about. The rap on SARS, severe acute respiratory system, severe and acute. The rap on SARS was that we were supposed to have gotten SARS as humans because Chinese people ate civet cats. They're these mongoose-like nocturnal cats, beloved as a tasty snack in southern China. But they were banned because they were thought of as vectors for SARS. You will be pleased to know, if you are a civet cat snack lover, that civet cats are now officially back on the menu in Guangdong province. They're still banned, but a recent sweep of Guangdong restaurants apparently turned up one live civet cat and 14 frozen ones. Chinese scientists say they have proof that SARS originates from civets, although the World Health Organization has cautioned against drawing definitive links. Those are some of the stories that I'm keeping an eye on today. But for sports and the moral anguish of Tim Hardaway, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. In golf, Patrick Harrington currently leads the Nissan Open in Los Angeles as of 5 minutes ago, leading Charles Howell III and Phil Mickelson by two strokes. That is still underway. Things could change. In the NBA, Cleveland pair ubu'd the L.A. Lakers 114-108. And Dallas deep-ellumed Houston 80-77. It was the Mavs' ninth straight. No games tonight because the All-Star game is Sunday in Las Vegas. And speaking of, the NBA has banished Tim Hardaway from All-Star weekend in Las Vegas because of his sensitive, intelligent comments about the gay community.
I hate gay people.
Yeah, that one. Said Commissioner David Stern, quote, "We removed him from representing us because we didn't think his comments were consistent with having anything to do with us." Thank you, David Stern.
Yeah.
Perhaps not enjoying the taste of both feet in his mouth, Hardaway's agent issued this statement, quote, "As an African American, I know all too well the negative thoughts and feelings hatred and bigotry cause. I regret and apologize for the statements that I may have made, certainly caused the same kinds of feelings and reactions. I especially apologize to my fans, friends, and family in Miami and Chicago. I am committed to examining my feelings and will recognize, appreciate, and respect the differences among people in our society. I regret any embarrassment I have caused the league on the eve of one of their greatest annual events."
I hate gay people.
So everyone just back off. Tim is examining his feelings, okay? Rachel?
Wow. I promise to examine my feelings.
Yeah, that is...
Are you sure you want to go out on a limb like that? Yeah, that is a pretty big promise.
That's the stinkiest apology in a long time.
That's unbelievable.
Wow.
You know, it's interesting, Kent. I saw today at ESPN.com that a columnist at ESPN.com has come out.
Wow.
In reaction to this scandal. A woman says, I saw her column today. She says, "I had vowed to never write a coming out article or a coming out column," but she was so angered by this experience with Hardaway that she herself has come out of the closet.
This is having major ripples that he probably didn't expect.
No. I can't imagine that he expects much in terms of advanced planning with thoughts like that. You know, I understand that some people think that way, but, you know, people who think that way, if they're big public figures, ought to just shut up about it.
Yeah, thank you.
You can't change the way that people think, but you can change the things that people say.
Yeah. Oh, did I tell you Tim Hardaway never won an NBA title? He never did. I thought I'd bring that up again.
You did mention that.
Yeah, I enjoy repeating it.
Though. Yeah, we could do that a lot. 19 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. We've got today's Ask Dr. Maddow question coming up. We've got a prize to give away on Ask Dr. Maddow this week. And we've got today's buried story. It's all coming up next on The Rachel Maddow Show.
Rachel Maddow Show loves to answer your questions. Call us at 212-871-8173. Air America Radio.
Have you heard of a child that was in a terrible accident?
I'm the change bandit. Now give me all your change.
No, silly, not like that.
Not like that?
No, just tell them how they can help by collecting the spare change from their friends, family, classmates, and co-workers. And donate to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. All from our good friends at the Sacramento Credit Union.
They can? And all they've got to do is go into the Sacramento Credit Union to find out how they can become a change bandit? Or they can log on to sacradiothon.com? Well, why didn't you say so?
I just did, silly.
What is a miracle? A miracle described in the Webster's Dictionary is an extraordinary event manifesting itself in human affairs. You know, each and every day, miracles happen at the UC Davis Children's Hospital. And now, with your help, you can be a part of the miracle process as well. From now through February 24th, when you purchase a 9-piece miracle meal from KFC, $1 goes directly to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. Did you know that the UC Davis Children's Hospital is the region's only pediatric intensive care unit caring for over 60,000 children each and every year? That is why this year the KFC family is proud to have partnered up with the UC Davis Children's Hospital, part of the Children's Miracle Network, to help make sure miracles continue to happen. And now with the help of KFC's Miracle Meal, you can be a part of one too. So do your part and go to a participating KFC for a great meal today and help continue to make miracles happen with the KFC Miracle Meal. For more information on how you can continue to make miracles happen, log on to www.kfcmiraclemeals.com.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpot start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Exactly how much does one have to drink to pickle one's liver? It's time for Ask Dr. Maddow. Rachel Maddow is a doctor. Just not that kind of doctor.
No, Dr. Rachel Maddow is perhaps best known as the world's leading authority on... Her greatest joy comes from sharing her vast trove of general knowledge with our goal-oriented listeners. So if there's something you've been dying to know, please give us a call, 212-871-8173. And remember, leave your full name and address so you, too, can be eligible for fabulous prizes at the end of the week. Today's question comes from Susan in Colorado.
Get her done.
What is sedition?
Sorry, Susan, didn't mean to put the words of Larry the Cable Guy in your mouth. Sorry about that. What is sedition?
What is sedition?
It's the second word in the title of Air America's long-lost and beloved morning show.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I think Chris has heard of it, too.
Yes, exactly. Sedition is a legal term which refers to an action that incites resistance to or insurrection against a government. And there have been several laws passed in the U.S. forbidding seditious speeches or writings. But these laws have been difficult to enforce except during periods of wartime. But, you know, I mean, the reason that you need to have very clear laws protecting free speech is that it's really, really, really tempting to ban seditious speech.
Yeah.
Really tempting, especially in a country where you've decided that the enemies are among you as well as beyond your borders. It's very, very politically tempting and very, I think, in the same way that that revenge is a tempting impulse in terms of criminal justice.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tempting to go down the law, down the road towards making speech like that illegal. In 1798, the U.S. enacted the Sedition Act, which stated that anyone, quote, opposing or resisting any law of the United States or any act of the President of the United States could be imprisoned for up to 2 years. It was also illegal to write, print, utter, or publish anything critical of the President or Congress. This law, as you might imagine, was not very popular, nor, I might add, very American, even though it happened in the 1700s. We tend to romanticize right. those things as old-school American. The law generated so much opposition that similar statutes weren't attempted again until the 20th century. World War I inspired another Sedition Act, which was used to prosecute over 2,000 Americans, mostly the radical press at that time. World War II inspired a more limited version of a Sedition Act. It outlawed advocating violence against the government. That wasn't used that much during the war, but it was later successfully used to prosecute Communist Party leaders in the 1950s. Eventually, the Supreme Court decided that speech criticizing public officials was protected under the Constitution. I might add that it's perhaps the most important speech to protect under the Constitution, and the Supreme Court's decision, for the most part, eliminated the crime of sedition in the United States.
Very good. Thank you, Susan. Remember, if you have a question for Dr. Maddow, please call us at 212-871-8173. Or send us an email at maddowonline.com for Ask Dr. Maddow.
Thank you, Kent. Thank you, Susan. I thought you were calling me Susan there for a second.
No.
I got very happy about that. You know how that goes.
Hey, I love Susan.
I love Susan. Hey, it's Friday, so that means that we've got Ask Dr. Maddow prizes to give away. And
nice.
This week's Ask Dr. Maddow winner happens to be the same person who asked today's question, Susan from Colorado. Congratulations. Susan from Colorado, Patty Griffin is going to be our guest next here on the show. We're going to send you a copy of Patty's new CD. It's called Children Running Through. It's great. I'm also sending you a copy of A Perfect Mess, The Hidden Benefits of Disorder, How Crammed Closets, Cluttered Offices, and On-the-Fly Planning Make the World a Better Place. Sounds dumb, but isn't. Actually, a very good book. You also get a glossy autographed photo of Kent Jones.
If you know a child, if you have a
Win fast, win often.
The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Turn this car right around.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Ooh, and I just dropped all my notes. Still on crutches. Can't do much moving around. I think I've got them now. Welcome back. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us. If you are in the Washington, D.C. area over the weekend and you see three big balloons floating above the Pentagon, don't be alarmed. They're supposed to be there. The Defense Department announced that three large balloons will be tethered to the Pentagon tomorrow as a test of new chemical and biological weapons defenses. According to Pentagon officials, the balloons are part of a series of regularly scheduled tests of the building's defenses, and this one is just more visible. In other words, the balloons are here to help. Do not panic. Submit to the balloons. A former U.S. border agent who allowed hundreds of illegal immigrants to cross from Mexico into the United States in return for cash was sentenced yesterday to 5 years in federal prison. The agent pled guilty last year to bribery and smuggling charges. He reportedly got $1,500 a head for each person he allowed to cross. Over 2 years, he made about $120,000. A federal judge ruled yesterday that the New York City Police Department must stop routinely videotaping people at public gatherings unless there is some indication that unlawful activity may occur. The judge, Charles S. Haight Jr. of the Federal District Court in Manhattan, says the police violated rules arising from a class action that has been under the court's jurisdiction for 35 years. In the ruling, the judge took a remarkable amount of poetic license. He made references to the founder of the New Yorker magazine, Harold Ross. He made references to the Oracle at Delphi. He made references to the poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Judge Haight actually paraphrased Longfellow in the opening lines of the ruling, saying, quote, "This is the class action eternal. There will be a handshoe class action and a judge of this court in charge of it as long as New York City stands." The judge even footnoted that particular phrase, citing Longfellow's poem Evangeline as the source. You know Evangeline. This is the forest primeval, the murmuring pines and the hemlocks bearded with moss and in garments green, indistinct in the twilight, stand like druids of eld. You know. Finally, the alma mater of Rachel Maddow Show producer Jackie Bell's parents, the University of Illinois, has decided to drop its racist Indian chief mascot. Since 2005, the University of Illinois, along with several other schools, has been subject to sanctions from the NCAA, which ruled that racist mascots were, quote, hostile and abusive. They will still, interestingly, be called the Fighting Illini at the University of Illinois, but they have decided that the word Illini is just short for Illinois. Musician Patty Griffin has a new record out. It's called Children Running Through. Not only is it a great album, it's also won her the biggest first sales week of her career and the number 34 spot on the Billboard Top 200 chart. As a fan of Patty Griffin, my experience of this new record is different than that of her previous records. In the past, when you listen to Patty Griffin, at least I've always had the feeling that when you're listening to her music, you're hearing them as music, but you're also reading, if you know what I mean. You get the sense that you have read something by the time you're done listening to one of her albums, because her lyrics have a very literary effect, I think. In this record, I don't necessarily feel that way. I feel that I'm more kind of just taken along for a ride for the whole experience. When Patty Griffin came by and stopped by the Air America studios this week, she said that that feeling that I had about this album being different resonated with the way that she has been thinking about this new album.
I noticed that very thing about myself. Like, I think I, you know, studied those great lyricists, you know, Dylan. And he's not a singer. And then I started listening to a lot of singers, and Sam Cooke is a big one, and all those songs are beautiful, and there's lots of room, you know, just, and gospel songs. There are a lot of examples of brilliant songs without a lot of words in them, and I just started paying attention more to those, because I do really love to sing, and I wanted to have longer, louder notes.
Yeah.
To sing, it just feels good.
Do you feel like in the past that you've tried to put your voice in a box, that you've tried to wall it in a little bit?
I might have. I you know, signed my first record deal in 1994, and I worked with a producer in 1995. And one of the first things he said was, you know, I love it when you don't sing loud, because I was singing pretty loud at the time. I had a lot of waitress angst, I think I met a number of people who, you know, praised that part of my voice, the quiet part of my voice. And so I got a little self-conscious about singing loud for a number of years, and I didn't even notice it. But I was finding a few years ago, this struggle in me. Every time I was on stage, I would want to let something rip, and I didn't quite dare to. That made me bummed out. So I kind of did a little more singing in my kitchen and letting it rip and having fun, you know, by myself. And that's sort of where this all started.
And that kind of built up your confidence about what it sounds like to hear your voice that way.
And I think there is a harshness to my voice up there sometimes that, you know, a real elegant crooner would not have. But I think there's also some great singers with harsh voices. So Nina Simone is one of them. And I really think that it's okay.
What you're singing about, it's not, you're not singing fa la la. I mean, you're singing songs that are about stuff, and sometimes it calls for a little, you know, a little growl.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little holler.
A little hag.
That's very good. Do you have any, my partner's an artist. She's 48. She's a visual artist. And she's as a fan of yours as well as I am. And she wanted me to ask you if you had advice for women in artistic fields in their 40s. In a place. It's always easy if you're, you know, 20 and gorgeous and on the cover of Us for both men and women. But I think 42-year-old men and 42-year-old women in the music business have a different, are treated differently, have different options.
I mean, I did notice when I hit 40, actually, when I was dropped off of my major label deal, I was 37, I thought, uh-oh, I'm too old now. And it took me a few years to kind of realize that was in my head.
Yeah.
And there's just, you know, it's a big universe. And it seems the whole point of making art is to sort of free yourself from outside perceptions and just see what comes up from that, you know, the belly or wherever it's coming from.
Yeah, from you.
And so, you know, to have that, those worries clouding that out seems very unfair.
To just live as if the revolution already happened. Just do it as if, just don't pay attention to those constraints because maybe they aren't real.
I think they're not. I mean, I think that, you know, you see a beautiful young person walk down the street, it's just a natural thing to go, wow, oh my gosh, they're so handsome or pretty. It's just a natural animal instinct. But my brain tells me also there's so much richness to aging.
Yeah.
And I know that, so I can let myself beat myself up for not being 25, but that's, wow.
Boy, that's something you're never going to win.
That's pretty dumb.
Patty Griffin, it's really nice to meet you. It's really nice to have you here. Are you going to play something for us?
Yeah, I am. Lighting up, baby. Light up that fire. I don't know what's gonna save me. From the cold night. And these sorrows. Crying over and these sorrows, I'm crying over. Embrace me, embrace me with your kind love. It's all I've ever wanted, all I've ever dreamed of, in all of this dreaming, the silver and gold, something to break this.
fire. I don't know what's gonna save me. From the cold night and this sorrow, I'm crying over and this sorrow, I'm crying over, crying over.
That's Patty Griffin with Crying Over. That's the closing track from her new record, Children Running Through. Patty, thank you so much for coming
back. Thanks a lot for having me.
It's the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio.
Do you have a question for Rachel Maddow? Call us at 212-871-8173 or email us from maddowonline.com. Air America Radio.
Have you heard of a child that was in terrible...
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
New rule. You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, Friday, new rule number one, enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
That's the hour.
Now, it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline Ricky!
Woohoo!
Well, no matter how bad things have gotten for President Bush, he can always comfort himself with the knowledge that at least Ricky Martin still likes him. Well, no mas. At a recent concert, the Muy Guapo pop star gave Bush the middle finger salute when he sang W's name in his song Asignatura Pendiente, which includes the words, a photo with Bush. Ricky's bird flipping prompted cheers from thousands of fans in San Juan. And lest we think Martin just went temporarily loco and would like to apologize later, he issued this statement, quote, my convictions of peace and life go beyond any government and political agenda, and as long as I have a voice on stage and off stage, I will always condemn war and those who promulgate it.
Hmm.
You know, I think he meant it.
Yeah.
He said promulgate.
Yeah.
Politically, this is a 180 for Ricky, if you recall. He was a headliner at the 2001 inauguration ball for President Bush, which should have been our first clue that we were in for a long, hard slog. Puerto Rico's 4 million people are U.S. citizens and can be drafted into the military, but cannot vote for president. Although I think Ricky may have just voted for them. This is Kent Jones for the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
Ricky Martin.
Ricky, doing a 180.
I mean, I don't...
Joining the team.
I have to say, the flipping off the president thing, it's not really my style for political debate, but his follow-up statement about explaining why he feels that way and what his opinion is.
No backing down.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. You know how on Friday they release news that they don't want people to notice?
Stinky, bad, corrupt, awful news on Friday.
Yes, it's Take Out the Trash Day because they know that nobody reads the Saturday papers and nobody watches the news on Friday night.
Psst, Rachel does.
I know.
A lot.
It's the only one I read. I just extrapolate from Saturday for the rest of the week.
Indeed.
It's often the time where they announce, you know, people announce that they're resigning to spend more time with their family.
Their family.
It's when people get fired. It's when audits get released. Mm-hmm. It's when, like, you know, bad economic figures get shunted
off.
It's
when they do terrible things to the environment frequently on Friday.
That's exactly right. But every once in a while, they save something for Friday that's just, you know, it's just a little squidgy. There's nothing evil about it. It's just something they'd prefer that people didn't talk about.
Right.
For example, President Bush... he's going to have a big scab on his face.
Really?
Yes. He had two moles removed from his left temple today.
Hmm.
Yes. It was a 5-minute procedure, a shave biopsy performed in the White House by his official physician. And he had a little local anesthetic. He's going to have a 1-inch scab on his head, on his temple.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, he's had a lot of stuff scraped off him. He had a precancerous lesion on his left arm taken off in August. He had a non-cancerous skin growth on his neck taken off in July 05. He had small lesions from his left shoulder and face taken off in 2004. And he had more stuff scraped off his face in December 2001.
Is he molting?
How much of him can be left?
Just a question.
I know. So presumably this is not expected to be any serious health concern for the president. They expect to show that they are non-cancerous. But it's the kind of thing, you know, they would just prefer that people not talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll stop. And tell you about today's pet story.
Oh, here comes the monkey.
Here comes the monkey. There is a town in Hungary.
Yeah.
It's in northeastern Hungary, a village called Ivad, I-V-A-D, and they are out of money. They need some cash.
They're out of money.
Yeah. There are 8 streets in Ivad, and they have decided to make them available for foreigners to name them after themselves.
For money.
Yes. You have to pay, it's about $511 per meter. So of the 8 streets in town, the price of renaming them ranges from about $125,000, $126,000 to the big street you can have for $311,000.
Why would you want to do that, can I ask?
So that you can, well, the headline, if you go to this town's website, is Buy Immortal in Ivad, Hungary! Exclamation point. Yvonne Village representatives have decided that all eight streets will be renamed, eight in parentheses. It can be your ancestor, acquaintance, relative, or a friend to be named after. The street cannot be named after people who are alive. So if you decide on your name after your death, it will be renamed according to a contract drawn up legally. I love translated websites.
I'm not buying T-bills. I've decided to spend money on getting a street named in Yvonne for $100,000.
They say the person must be or have been prominent in their sphere of life. The application must be in writing with a short introduction of the person's achievement. You email it to the mayor. On the application, you have to pick which street you want named, and they will guarantee that the street name will not change for 300 years.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, they say that if your application has been accepted, you'll have to deposit the money within 2 weeks in the village. Once you deposit the money, the name change will take place within a week. From the money they raise, it says, from the money raised, we plan to build sewage, upgrade the street, build sewage, upgrade the street lighting, nursery school, public road resurfacing, and ancient tourist place.
Okay.
Yeah.
No building sewage.
No.
Bad idea.
But just think how much sewage you could build with $300,000. It's 57 minutes past the hour. You know, we'll post a link. Maybe there's somebody out there who wants to name all eight streets after themselves in Yvonne. You can name them all after you for the bargain price of $1.8 million. That would build a lot of sewage for those people. Think of the children.
Ew.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
The cynic says, I started losing my hair and there was nothing.
Whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. Extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it, because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320. AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The vote was 246 to 182, 17 Republicans joining all but two Democrats in support of a non-binding resolution that puts the House on record opposing the troop surge in Iraq. California Democrat Tom Lantos said American troops should be surging out of Iraq.
The escalation is not only good for the United States of America, the escalation is good for Iraq. Because unless we de-escalate, the Iraqis will never step up to the plate.
But House Republican leader John Boehner had a different spin on de-escalation.
The American people will not support a strategy that involves pulling the rug out from under American troops in the combat zone by cutting off their reinforcements and forcing them to face an enemy without our full support.
In the Senate, Majority Leader Harry Reid has scheduled a test vote on an Iraq war resolution tomorrow, forcing several presidential hopefuls to change their travel plans. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell takes responsibility for the state's response to Wednesday's storm, which left hundreds of travelers stranded on major roads.
There were significant mistakes in judgment made, and
significant breakdown, almost a total breakdown in communications between state agencies.
He says it's totally unacceptable. Crews are still trying to clear the thick ice from sections of Interstate 78, 80, and 81. JetBlue is still in recovery mode again today. Passengers faced flight cancellations and long delays. At New York's Kennedy Airport, Gabriel Aiello was trying to get to a weekend wedding in Tampa.
Just seems completely disorganized. The best way to describe it is hell.
Effective today, State Farm says it's not writing any new homeowners or commercial policies in Mississippi. State Attorney General Jim Hood says he'll seek legislation to reverse that. Despite claims after Hurricane Katrina, he says State Farm isn't hurting.
You're seeing a corporation that has made $3.9 billion in the most catastrophic year in history. They have $50 billion in reserves. They never touched their reserves to pay off these claims.
State Farm objects to Hood calling it a robber baron and says the decision is a reaction to the legal and political challenges it faces in Mississippi. Two moles were removed from President Bush's left temple in a brief procedure this afternoon. The White House says doctors do not think they're malignant. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports a jury in Bradenton, Florida, has sentenced a driver to 25 years in prison for an angry outburst behind the wheel.
Prosecutors said Eric Payton shot at a pest control truck during a road rage dispute. The truck driver tried to escape, but he ran a red light and slammed into a car, killing one passenger, critically injuring another, and the driver. Payton's attorney maintained that he didn't shoot at the truck and was holding a cell phone, not a gun. The men in the truck said they saw and heard Payton fire at them, and another witness said she heard the gunshot.
The Dow up 2 points today. This is CBS News.
Ever wonder when buying a used car if you're just buying a used problem? Not if it's a Honda certified used car. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. And now get low APR financing on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
It was like we were flying.
We could see homes, a school, restaurants.
We could see parks and shops.
And you know what?
We never left our living room.
At ColdwellBanker.com, advanced maps give you an aerial view of homes as well as the surrounding neighborhood. See for yourself.
I always wanted to take up flying.
Now you don't have to. Get the whole picture at ColdwellBanker.com. Coldwell Banker, the perfect partner. Each office is independently owned and operated.
It's not exactly a log cabin, but the boyhood home of Walter Mondale is for sale. WCCO Radio's Steve Murphy has the story.
The future vice president lived in the 19th century parsonage in tiny Elmore, Minnesota, back in the late 1930s and 40s. The current owners bought the home in 2003 for $15,000, spent the next 3 years fixing it up, and placed it on eBay with an opening bid of $50,000. Mondale wishes them well.
They called me and said they were going to do it. It's a lovely little home, and I hope it sells.
Mondale never lost his attachment for the house, even launching his 1984 presidential campaign from the back porch. Steve Murphy, CBS News, Minneapolis.
The winner of a $74.5 million Powerball lottery jackpot came forward today in Raleigh, North Carolina. Jackie Alston is a 38-year-old single mother who, until recently, worked as a state prison guard. She picked up her check and left the news conference in a stretch limo. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Doctor.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking, as in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Direct with David Bender. David's guests tonight are Congressman Steny Hoyer and Senator Jim Webb.
I would live like a free man.
And welcome to the program. I'm honored today that joining us is the Majority Leader of the House of Representatives, Congressman Steny Hoyer. Congressman Hoyer, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thank you very much, David. Good to be with you.
Let me ask you, the vote on the non-binding resolution, which you've shepherded through this House, and you've allowed full and free debate on all sides leading up to the vote that, as I say, will happen in a few hours. How do you see it playing out? What is your prediction right now in terms of the ultimate vote in the House?
David, I think with this will pass with a significant bipartisan vote. And it will be a statement that, Mr. President, we do not believe that your policy of escalation, in light of the military commander's advice, in light of the Maliki government's position, in light of the American public's view, is not going to work. And we urge you to forge a new direction. And we have made specific recommendations, and we hope that with this bipartisan vote that the president will focus on a change of direction. We believe that there have been, we know there have been three or four escalations of troops in Baghdad.
And they haven't worked.
And it hasn't worked. It hasn't brought the kind of stability and security and ending of the violence that was projected every time it was utilized.
In your floor
most
speech,
of the military commanders say it's not going to work this time.
In your floor speech, you said Congress has been absent without leave prior to now.
Yes, I think this Congress over the last 4 years on this war has been complacent and therefore complicit. It has not exercised very substantial oversight. It has not held people accountable for not performing. It has not really looked at the policies promoted by this administration skeptically.
But, Mr. Leader, in all candor, a lot of people are still skeptical. They hear the president saying that this doesn't really matter. All that matters is the funding and that he's basically going to continue to do, regardless of this and regardless of a bipartisan vote, he's going to continue to do what he has been doing, which is to go forward with his escalation. So let me ask you, in terms of accountability, if that is, let's assume we know the Senate is going to go into session tomorrow to consider this when it passes. If it is both House and Senate and he still moves forward, is it time then to ratchet up the accountability and actually talk about something that would require him not to go forward?
Well, first of all, David, let me say there have been over, at this point in time, 6 weeks into the session, 52 hearings, 26 in the Senate, 26 in the House. It just happens to be even. It wasn't planned that way. 52 hearings on oversight on Iraq, Afghanistan, and our policies.
So in 6 weeks, that's by far more than it happened in 6 years.
It's certainly by far more than it's happened in the last 4 years. I think if you put 6 years together, I'm not sure, but certainly more than the last 4 years.
Fair enough.
And probably four to five times as many as happened in the last Congress. And that's in the first 6 weeks, because we believe the Congress has a duty and a responsibility to effect oversight. That's what the Founding Fathers expected. That's why they created the equal and co-equal branch of government. And in fact, the Article 1 creates the Congress. Article 2 creates the executive. But we have not been doing that. So we've done that. So that was the first step. This is, we've called it a first step, but a second step of saying, Mr. President, in a bipartisan way, we don't think the policy you've suggested is going to work. We think you need to change it. If that doesn't happen, we're now going to go to a period of time next month where we have a supplemental appropriation. The appropriators considering the supplemental appropriation are talking about putting language in, which requires what I think the American public will feel is reasonable. That is to say, if you're going to put troops in harm's way, make sure they're adequately trained and equipped.
Let's explain to people, this is the proposal by the Speaker and John Murtha that talks about several things. One, if you're increasing troops, you would make sure that they get adequate rest in between tours of duty, that there'd be special training that would help them to deal with counterinsurgency, training that our troops have not had, and that they would be safely equipped with the kind of equipment and protection that they have not had in the past. Let's take a minute, listen to John Murtha describe his proposal in his own words.
We want the people to request or suggest or demand that their member of Congress votes for this resolution, because it very clearly reinforces what the election said. But having said that, the real vote will come on the legislation we're putting together. This non-binding legislation is an opinion. But the legislation I'm putting together, first of all, puts restrictions on the president, on the administration, saying you can't send people back into battle until they've had a year at home. Now, they traditionally should have 2 years at home, but they're only going to have 1 year, and I'm reasonable enough to realize that, okay, a year at home is enough that they can do the training and equipping. They must have the equipment and the training, and they must be certified by the chiefs of the various services before they can go back. Second, we can't extend people. Now, if they can't extend people, if they can't send people back that don't have equipment and so forth, they can't continue to surge is what it amounts to. And they know that, and they're very concerned about that. Also, I'm saying let's eliminate stop loss, which means you can keep people on after their enlistment has run out. Those are the kind of things that are technical things which are very harmful to the people that are serving, very difficult for them to put up with, and yet puts tremendous pressure on the families, and yet it's necessary for them to continue to sustain the deployment.
And that was Congressman John Murtha's description of his idea to use appropriated funds in a targeted way that would both better protect our troops in Iraq and preclude Bush's escalation.
That's what Mr. Murtha and his committee have been talking about. Now, the supplemental appropriation bill has not been written yet, so that these are ideas, and we'll have to see how they're fleshed out.
How do you feel about that?
Certainly I think that we need to require that troops be adequately trained and equipped. I think there will be, and I think there are concerns about, we want to make sure that there is nothing, I want to make sure, let me put it that way, that there is nothing in the supplemental that will undermine the safety of our troops or the protection of our troops. In other words, we have deployed people in harm's way. We need to make sure they're safe. Nothing that we do is going to undermine their safety.
Well, again, you took to the floor the other day when Heather Wilson was speaking, a Republican congresswoman from New Mexico, who was suggesting that that's what Democrats might well be achieving here. And you were very forceful in making it clear. And I think it's an astounding thing that Republicans, even at this stage, and it's not just Republicans, but largely, are suggesting that somehow Democrats, by opposing this war, are in fact risking the safety of the troops. Isn't it just clear that we're trying, or those who oppose this escalation are also talking about trying to protect the troops by putting in some of these safeguards?
We want to protect the troops, and we want to have an effective, successful fight against terrorism. and the assumption by Heather Wilson or anybody else that it's not the Congress's business to discuss the best strategy to achieve success. That's what democracy is about, discussion and debate.
Did anyone show her the war powers provisions in the Constitution?
Well, I don't know whether anybody showed her that. My contention was, and I was animated because the assertion that somehow that Democrats were not going to protect the troops or provide adequate supplies and training for troops was absolutely absurd. We are going to do that.
Well, that's a Fox News.
Silent when we see policies being pursued which are not successful and leaving our troops in a position, as John McCain has said, of not being able to adequately protect themselves and simply to be picked off by these IEDs and these terrorists.
Well, as I started to say, that is a Fox News talking point. Congressman, you're on Air America now. And we're very clear, and I think it's important to keep saying this, that the spin that the Republican noise machine has promoted for any number of years now, that any kind of criticism of this policy is both risking the troops and helping terrorists, even this president, just as you well remember, just in the run-up to the election, suggested that opposition to the war or Democrats taking the majority would somehow aid and abet terrorism. That rhetoric has got to be cut off, finally, by those of us who are appalled by it.
I agree with that, David, but apparently the president agrees with it, because if you saw his press conference yesterday, he said, look, people who disagree with me are as patriotic and caring about the troops as I am. We have a difference of opinion. He acknowledged that's what democracy is about.
Well, that's
why we're successful.
I suppose that's a rhetorical victory for our side. I'd like to see the substance behind his words.
Frankly, what I think it is a recognition by the president that that's what the American people believe. They want to have these issues debated fully. They want to have alternative opinions put before them so they can make an informed judgment as to whether or not we're doing the right thing. So, yes, I think not only do we have a rhetorical victory, but it's clear the American public support this debate. In my opinion, it's clear that the overwhelming majority of Americans support this resolution in the sense that they want to send the message, Mr. President, we don't think the policies you're pursuing are going to be successful, and we want to change policy.
Can you hang on 1 second? We need to take a quick break. You're listening to Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Don't forget to join us on our blog, politicallydirectradio.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Air America Radio presents Politically Direct with David Bender.
What do you do, Bender?
I'm a bender. I bend girders. That's all I'm programmed to do.
And welcome back. I'm talking with Congressman Steny Hoyer. You were the chief sponsor of the Help America Vote Act, which, you know, was moving toward doing something very important, which was restoring confidence in our electoral process and in the integrity of the process. But clearly, there is still a lot of skepticism. And I have to ask you, do you think that there needs to be more work done legislatively to continue that effort, specifically with regard to electronic voting? We
absolutely
hear this so much. What would you do?
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, David, we, Speaker Pelosi and I, met with members of the House Administration Committee who have jurisdiction over the Help America Vote Act. I've also talked to John Conyers, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. We need to take very significant action as it relates to assuring, the integrity of voting equipment, to make sure that voters have a confidence in the equipment they're using, make sure that we can have a paper trail or a record of how people voted, so when there is a dispute, there is a way to check to see that the machinery was working properly and that votes were counted properly, and to have a confidence in who won and who lost. In addition to that, I'm very concerned about provisional balloting, which is not uniform throughout the country. I think it needs to be uniform so that it's not jurisdiction by jurisdiction that people decide whether or not you're going to be able to have a vote if there's some question as to whether you're properly registered. that can be checked the next couple of days after the election, after you vote, and if you are properly registered, it will be counted.
Often those votes are not counted at all.
Often they're not counted, and it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, the criteria that is used for counting the votes. That's not, I think, correct, and that's not how federal elections ought to be decided. They ought to be decided with uniformity, with complete assurance of citizens that when they, not only do they have the right to vote, but when they do vote, that their votes are accurately tallied and accurately counted.
We just saw what happened in Sarasota, Florida, and that election, Vern Buchanan was seated. Christine Jennings, who's been on this program, is still contesting the validity of that. How do you see that playing out? Are you involved in leadership and overseeing that process?
I am. We're working with Christine Jennings. I've even talked to Mr. Buchanan, and the fact is that it is just... defies reason that in some of the polling places, in some of the jurisdictions, in one in particular, 18,000 people decided not to vote for the congressional office and voted for lesser offices in numbers greater than 18,000.
Those of us have been in politics a long time. You're in your 14th term in the Congress. That just doesn't happen.
It defies reason, and the chances of that happening are astronomical. Therefore, a reasonable conclusion is the machinery didn't work. If we conclude ultimately the machinery didn't work, then we need to order a new election. We're not going to know who won or lost, but we need to have a new election, and that's really what we're looking at. We talked about that yesterday. We're pursuing that vigorously. It's in the courts in Florida. But ultimately, under the Constitution, the House has the absolute oversight and right to determine who should be seated, and we have the responsibility to do that. This is an election decided by less than 400 votes with a very substantial question raised.
Congressman, I know you're short of time, and I want to let you go on. Let me ask you something. At the end of this process, this vote that's going to be taken today, hopefully in the Senate in the next few days, how long before we see our troops start to come home?
Well, I think we have recommended redeployment of troops out of harm's way. That's the first step. And turning responsibility over to the Iraqis. We're now 4 years into this. We're a year after an election with a new government. There is no reason why the Iraqis themselves should not be taking lead responsibility for their own security and for bringing under control the militias that have been formed and to resolving the conflicts, which is a civil war conflict, between Sunnis and Shia and other factions. Our troops need to be redeployed out of harm's way. Then we need to start reducing their numbers, changing their mission to training rather than fighting. So we hope that that will be done in the near term.
And if the president doesn't do it, the Congress will?
There's no doubt in my mind that the American people will demand the Congress to take action, and the Congress will.
Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, thank you so much for joining us today on Politically Direct. All the best to you, sir.
David, thank you very much.
Well, that was Majority Leader Steny Hoyer earlier today. As we go to break, let's listen to a little of his floor speech on that non-binding resolution, which did in fact pass a few hours after we spoke with him by a margin of 246 to 182. That meant 17 Republicans voted against the escalation. And then when we come back, we'll be joined by Senator Jim Webb, another powerful opponent of this misbegotten war. Okay, once again, here's Steny Hoyer. This is Politically Direct on Air America Radio.
There is little doubt that our Iraq policy is not succeeding. Our Commander-in-Chief, President Bush, acknowledged on this floor last month during his State of the Union address that, and I quote, "Whatever you voted for, you did not vote for failure." I voted for the authorization, and I did not vote for failure. But the policies being pursued by this administration have not led to success. After nearly 4 years at war, after more than 3,100 of our finest sons and daughters have given the ultimate measure of sacrifice in Iraq, after more than 25,000 have been wounded, after the expenditure of more than $400 billion on this war effort by the American taxpayer, our success seems as remote as ever.
Have you ever heard of a child that was in a terrible accident?
Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long distance calls you can make anytime, and no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S., taxes and fees not included.
What is a miracle? A miracle described in the Webster's Dictionary is an extraordinary event manifesting itself in human affairs. You know, each and every day, miracles happen at the UC Davis Children's Hospital. And now, with your help, you can be a part of the miracle process as well. From now through February 24th, when you purchase a 9-piece miracle meal from KFC, $1 goes directly to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. Did you know that the UC Davis Children's Hospital is the region's only pediatric intensive care unit caring for over 60,000 children each and every year? That is why this year the KFC family is proud to have partnered up with the UC Davis Children's Hospital, part of the Children's Miracle Network, to help make sure miracles continue to happen. And now, with the help of KFC's Miracle Meal, you can be a part of one too. So do your part and go to a participating KFC for a great meal today and help continue to make miracles happen with the KFC Miracle Meal. For more information on how you can continue to make miracles happen, log on to www.kfcmiraclemeals.com.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Conspiracy? Is it an invasion? Is it a revolution? Yes.
Now, Politically Direct with David Bender on Air America Radio.
It's been a hard day's night.
And welcome back. Well, joining me now is the junior senator from the Commonwealth of Virginia. James Webb was elected in November of 2006 and has been a leading opponent of the war in Iraq, and we're delighted to welcome him to the program. Senator Webb, welcome to Politically Direct.
Thanks for having me.
You gave a speech just earlier today on the floor of the Senate in which you talked about the lack of respect shown by the executive branch to the legislative branch. You've really actually drawn this down to what this issue is about. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think that when I was running my campaign, just to back up, there were three major themes that we ran on. One was reorienting national security, of which Iraq is a part. The other was economic fairness, and the third was accountability. And I think that post 9/11, through the vote for authorizing force in Iraq, saw this administration just grab more and more power that traditionally has been with the Congress, because everyone in this country was worried at the time. And since that time, we've seen a complete lack of respect for the legislative process on the war, and also on other issues. And I wanted to highlight that a little bit at the beginning of my my comments today, because clearly, if the Republicans over here will think about it, other than those that are blindly loyal to the administration, they'll see that we have to sort out the issue of balance of power if we're going to move forward as a country.
Well, it's ironic, and you've served in the executive branch. Let me remind people that you were actually Ronald Reagan's Secretary of the Navy. You've seen this from both sides of the discussion, and in fact, it's, of course, for those who don't have long memories, the Republicans were extremely critical of executive power when Bill Clinton was president.
Yeah, there's always a tension between the executive and legislative branch. I was a committee counsel in the Congress before I was in the Reagan administration, and at that time, I think the Congress had a much better view of where its authority lied. You know, it was in a few years after the Watergate scandal, and we had, you know, some pretty energetic members of Congress. And I see things. I've seen things since 2002 that never would have happened in the Congress that I was a committee counsel.
They were unimaginable, and these kinds of excesses.
Yeah, and I've seen it on. Actually, I've seen it. I've watched Washington work as a journalist and as a member of the executive branch. I got 5 years in the Pentagon and over here on the legislative side. And the imbalance is as bad as I've ever seen in my life. And I'm hoping now with the Democratic majority here that we're going to see a lot stronger oversight from our committee chairman. And, and you're beginning to see that. I think Pat Leahy's doing a terrific job on the Judiciary Committee, by the way. And, you know, he's talking about swearing people in and yep, you know, getting to the facts.
Well, we had Steny Hoyer on earlier in the program, and he was talking about the fact that even in the last 6 weeks between the House and the Senate, there have been 52 oversight hearings already conducted, 26 in the House, 26 in the Senate, on a variety of issues. And that, you know, arguably is more than in the last 4 years.
Yeah, and it's such an important part of the legislative process, of the whole congressional executive branch interface. When I was a committee counsel, we regularly had oversight hearings, and there have been virtually none over the last 6 years. And not just oversight hearings. One thing that I've done on the Foreign Relations Committee is signal that I want to get to the bottom in terms of the facts involved in a lot of the money that's gone into Iraq, the Iraq Reconstruction Program, et cetera, which bypassed the committees completely, a lot of that money, the way that they designed the spending bills. And so even outside of the direct committee process, we're gonna start breaking this apart and getting some accountability.
Which is terrific. And Henry Waxman, of course, opened with just that issue, talking about the accountability for where that Reconstruction money went. I want to come back to your speech on the floor just a few hours ago. You talked about the need in Iraq, and you've said this for a long time, to develop a regional consensus. What does that mean?
Well, there are limits to which you can use your military in any war situation, but particularly in the way that they have been put into Iraq. And so if we want to resolve the problem, we have to have a diplomatic process that is as properly constructed as our military people have been, quite frankly.
Right.
And, you know, I've been saying for more than 3 years that what we need is a diplomatic conference involving the people in the countries in the region that have historical and cultural ties to Iraq. They're going to be playing in this environment when we leave, and someday we're going to leave. So we need to get them to the table. Right now what we have is By default, we've got a lot of these countries playing in Iraq by supporting the ethnic groups that they have ties to. You've got the Saudis on one side. People are upset that they might be supporting the Sunni insurgency. And you've got Iran with more power in Iraq than it's had in probably more than 100 years. Let's get them to the table. Let's get them to work constructively in a diplomatic environment. It's not something that would be difficult to do with the right leadership. And I like to remind people that after we went into Afghanistan in 01, we did bring all of those tangential countries to the table, including Iran. We had India, Pakistan, Iran, and the other countries, and that was how we ended up with the formation of the Karzai government in Afghanistan. So we need to do it. You can't deal with your adversaries by ignoring them. We need to engage them in a way where we don't give up on the issues that we care about. That's exactly what we did to China starting 1971-72.
Senator, can this president, can this administration take the lead on that, or is it beyond the point of no return in terms of the credibility of the Bush administration for,
you know,
that kind of
consensus? The real question to me, I've been having, I've raised this very strongly since I've been in the Senate, and, you know, the administration knows how strongly I raised it during a campaign, and being on the Foreign Relations Committee and the Armed Services Committee, I have had a lot of outreach from the administration with people trying to, you know, to find a middle ground. The real question to me is whether this president will look at the reality and understand that that needs to happen, and that's a huge question mark.
Well, it remains a question mark every day. We've seen his reaction, and now today the House has passed, and tomorrow in the Senate you'll begin consideration of the non-binding resolution, simply saying that the Congress opposes this escalation. He has already said that doesn't matter to him. The only thing that would matter is a change in the appropriations. Do you think that this is a wasted effort, or do you think that this can lead to something that can have an impact on this president?
I do not believe it's a wasted effort. I don't believe it's going to be the only effort. And, of course, I think where the administration is right now and some of the Republican Party is that they're waiting for these other amendments to be laid out that would be cutting off funding and that sort of thing. And in that area, the Democrats, I think, need to be responsible, and I think they're going to be. No one wants a precipitous withdrawal that would backfire on our desire to get our troops out and at the same time bring harmony in the region. And nobody wants to cut off money that the troops in Iraq need in order to do their job.
I was so struck today, Senator, by what you said on the floor, which is people keep talking about we have to do what's best for the troops and protect the troops. The troops, as you point out, have been saying for a year that it's time to leave. 72% a year ago told John Zogby that they hope to be out by the end of 06.
You know, what I have tried to do, you know, as someone who comes from a family with a long military tradition, is to say that politicians should not use the troops for their own political ends on either side of this issue. And I do take offense when I see so many of the politicians on the other side try to say that if we don't support George W. Bush, that we are betraying the troops. And, you know, I said during one hearing that that's inverted logic, that the troops, we are not pursuing this strategy for the troops. The troops are fighting this because of the political process, and we need to be responsible from the top, and we need to make sure that the sacrifices we are asking them to make are worth the risk to the country. And, you know, to me, that's not disloyal to the troops.
That is the highest form of loyalty. And again, you talk about the tradition in your family, and your own son is continuing that tradition, and we wish him the best, and in fact, we wish him the best, which means a speedy end to this misbegotten war. Senator, hang on a second. We need to take one quick break. This is Politically Direct on Air America Radio. We're talking with Senator Jim Webb. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Here's your chance to be part of America.
sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on an extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area. So stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the west, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
This weekend, so I tuned into C-SPAN, and I'm watching the show Washington Journal, and I'm just, I mean, I was stunned. You take a look.
Somebody mentioned the John Stewart program. I've never seen that in my life, and I go to my grave never having seen it.
Really? You'll go to your grave never having seen it. When's that scheduled for?
Why? I don't see any reason for it. It's a comedian, a self-righteous comedian, taking on airs of grandeur, and I don't really need that.
Yes, Robert Novak does not watch The Daily Show or myself. Not surprising. I keep reading all these articles about how The Daily Show is big amongst the 115-year-old vampire demons, but...
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
About the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
Air America Radio presents Politically Direct with David Bender.
And we're back with Senator Jim Webb of Virginia. Senator, before you talked about the three things that you had run on as a candidate, reorienting our national security posture, developing greater accountability, and bringing fairness back to our economic system. This has been something, when you responded to the President's State of the Union address, you spent a lot of time talking about the issue of economic inequality in this country. That is absolutely a center point of what you think the Democratic Party ought to be about.
Absolutely is, and I think that it is the key issue for the Democratic Party as the party expands and rebuilds to get back to a lot of its historical base. As I mentioned in that speech, Andrew Jackson kind of invented the modern Democratic Party with the Jackson administration in 1828, and his credo was that you measure the health of a society not at the apex but at its base. And, you know, I don't think it's any accident that shortly after that speech, President Bush visited the New York Stock Exchange and made a comment about executive compensation and how corporate executives shouldn't be rewarded unless their companies are succeeding.
I saw that, actually.
Yeah, I don't think you ever would have heard him say that if it hadn't have been for the reaction to
Response. In your response, but isn't he still hedging it a little bit? Isn't he saying it's not so much that it's based on greed and excessive corporate profiteering, but he talked about the need for better education, and that's really
I have no illusions about where the administration is on the issue. I think that issue resounds so loudly when it's put out there that even someone like George W. Bush had to say something, reasonably soon after the issue was put on the national agenda. And we're going to keep at it. I'm on the Joint Economic Committee, and we've got a number of freshmen in this Senate class who are really strongly on this: the need for economic fairness, the need to look at corporate tax loopholes. We want a healthy economy. No one wants to take the American economy down, but we want the people who are working in America to A, keep their jobs, and B, get the proper share of the benefits of this economy.
And how do you answer them when they put out statistics saying that job growth is increased and wages in the Bush administration versus the 90s when Bill Clinton was president? They're trying to use some of those numbers to say that it is a false sense of economic inequality that people have. They just aren't reading the numbers right. How do you answer that?
Well, you know, why economics is such an inexact science, but the clearest facts are that corporate profits in this country are at an all-time high as a percentage of our national wealth. Wages and salaries are at an all-time low as a percentage of our national wealth. And the effects of the internationalization of corporate America are being felt not only by blue-collar but by white-collar America, and we have to find a formula that protects our workers in an equal way with the international environment. Difficult to do, but I'm committed to working on it.
Well, and one of the things you've just launched, I want to tell people about it, is a website, bornfighting.com. And what's that going to do?
I'm not allowed to talk about that. I'm calling you from the Senate, and that's campaign. So
all right, if that's a campaign,
I apologize for
no. All right, you've said nothing, but let me tell people because I can that
I appreciate
gonna,
if you do it after I hang up.
After you hang up, I'm going to tell people about it.
I appreciate it.
But Senator, I want to tell you we are again enormously honored to have you on Air America. But there's a moment here in time where people have looked at this Congress, and we get this every day, and I just need to end with this. People are saying the Democrats were given an opportunity to lead, and there seems to be a very strong sense of urgency that we're hearing every day at this network that if there is not action, the Democrats will not have a long window of opportunity to take that leadership. Are you confident that this party is going to step up and actually change this policy?
Well, there are high expectations, and there's a lot of energy over here. If you look at the top 10 bills that were introduced, and they all go to the right issues rather than the emotional symbolic issues that were being debated a year ago. The difficulty that we have in the Senate is that we have a 51-49 majority, and with Senator Johnson out, we have a 50-49, and on the Iraq war, with Senator Lieberman being such a supporter of the war, we start off 50-49 on the other direction. And in order to stop endless debate, you have to get 60 votes. This is what we're going to do tomorrow, is try to get 60 votes so that we can push this bill forward so that we can actually debate it and get it done. So the Senate is a very difficult environment to work in, even though we are in the majority. But I have a real respect for Harry Reid and what he's been doing. He's really a workhorse, and everybody's eyes are on the right target. We just have to figure out a way to get there.
Senator Webb, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for joining us on Politically Direct. We wish you the best.
Okay, thank you.
And that was the junior senator from Virginia, Jim Webb. And as we discussed, and he was quite clear that he couldn't talk about the political activities he's also engaged in, a real sign of an honorable man, even not wanting to make reference to it on the air, let me do that. Bornfighting.com is a website that'll direct you to the Political Action Committee, Born Fighting PAC, that Senator Webb has set up. The mission is to support candidates and entities that are committed to reorienting our national security posture, bringing fairness back to our economic system, and developing greater accountability in government, all the things that Jim Webb just talked about. He's a remarkable man. And as we end today, let me play a little of that floor speech I was talking about with Senator Webb. He gave it earlier today, very focused in what this administration has not done and what we need to do to bring an end to this war once and for all. I'm David Bender, and this is Senator Jim Webb. Thanks for joining us.
I would urge my colleagues to think about the vote that took place in 2002, authorizing the use of force in Iraq, and about what happened afterwards. This was not a party line vote. I was not a member of this body, and I do personally believe that it was an erroneous vote. But at the same time, at least in its outcome, most importantly, we should look at the lack of respect shown by the administration after this vote. This lack of respect was a clear signal that the true issues dividing us in this government are more related to the relations between the executive and legislative branches than between our respective parties. The administration has failed the country again and again in the conduct of this war. At the same time, it repeatedly claims that it holds the power, regardless of the input of the Congress, to continue to push our military people to the limits of their endurance, while avoiding the diplomatic options which are crucial to resolving the situation in Iraq, which inevitably evolved from our invasion and occupation there. I've heard discussion today about the consequences of withdrawal, and Mr. President, the first thing I would point out is that no one on this side is advocating a precipitous withdrawal. But the consequences that are being described, increased terrorism, the empowerment of Iran, the loss of prestige of the United States around the world, and economic distress in our country are, quite frankly, the exact conditions that many of us were warning about if we invaded in the first place. And the question is not how we withdraw, or should we withdraw. Someday we are going to withdraw. Inevitably, we're going to.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag, is a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is talking about a new direction after passage of the Iraq War resolution.
This resolution today sets the stage for that new direction, one in which we will focus on other than military initiatives.
She and her fellow Democrats want to use legislative muscle to start a de-escalation in Iraq. 17 Republicans voted with the Democrats today, but not Sam Johnson, a prisoner of war in Vietnam.
Today, let my body serve as a brutal reminder that we must not repeat the mistakes of the past. Instead, learn from them. We must not cut funding for our troops. We must stick by them. We must support them all the way.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House. So as not to inflate the significance of the resolution, the official reaction here is unusually gentle and mild-mannered. In a written statement, spokesman Tony Snow defended the president's Iraq strategy and stressed that the resolution is non-binding. He said the White House will be focused on getting Congress to approve new funding for U.S. troops in Iraq.
Tomorrow is the start of a three-day weekend, but the Senate will be in session. Democratic leaders will submit the House resolution to a test vote. Travel in parts of the Northeast is getting back to normal about as fast as ice melts in February. Sections of Pennsylvania interstates are still closed. Governor Ed Rendell blames an almost total breakdown in communication. WCBS Radio's Ginny Casola talked to one frustrated traveler.
It's been a mess. Just a nightmare.
Bill, who works for Unger Freight Services, expected to make it from Pittsburgh to New York's Kennedy Airport in 8 hours to deliver a package heading to London, but it took almost 3 days.
20 hours on Interstate 78 starting Wednesday afternoon.
We caught up with him on Friday in Bucks County at a stop on the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
It was an odyssey.
What did you do during all that time?
I had a paperback with me.
Paperback sales at airports have been booming as travelers wait hours and hours for flights. JetBlue still has a major backlog. A shortage of crews forced many flights to be canceled today. In the past few years, President Bush has had several non-cancerous lesions removed from his skin. Today, a dermatologist took two moles from his left temple. The White House says tests are expected to show they're benign. Controversy in Guilford County, North Carolina, where policy requires all juvenile offenders to be shackled in court. CBS News correspondent Jim Crisula reports.
Supporters say shackling juveniles in court keeps them from trying to run. Opponents, including Keith Howard with Legal Aid of North Carolina, complain it causes more harm than good.
You're telling a child that you're guilty, you're a bad person. You deserve to be in shackles.
A judge is being asked to settle the dispute in Greensboro where adult inmates are not required to wear leg restraints in court. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
The Dow up 2. This is CBS News.
Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox. Unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple, you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
In the search for ways to improve healthcare, we'd like to add another solution. I-beams. That's right, I-beams. A member of the American Institute of Architects can use I-beams to create spaces that enhance healing by easing a patient's mind, sharpening a surgeon's skill, softening a nurse's touch. Not bad for a hunk of iron. Get an AIA architect involved early. You'll feel much better. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
One of Hollywood's great songwriters has died at 92. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman has the story.
You may not know his name, but you certainly know his music.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa.
Ray Evans co-wrote along with Jay Livingston dozens of songs that became standards. One of their most famous, Nat King Cole's Mona Lisa, but there were many others. They also co-wrote one of Bing Crosby's most famous hits.
Silver Bells.
Silver Bells.
And Livingston and Evans also wrote some memorable television theme songs.
I am Mr. Ed.
Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Emmy Award winner Robert Adler has died. He wasn't a TV actor or director. He was an engineer. But he and colleague Eugene Pauly made TV viewing a true armchair activity. They invented the remote control, the 1956 Zenith Space Command. He was 93. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS.
Honey!
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking, as in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent Budget and rent like a genius.
It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
But not for much longer. America is waking up and smelling the CO2. Welcome to EcoTalk, where we bring you sound solutions for a healthier planet and people. And each day we endeavor to green the blue and red states one show at a time. Our first guest is reaching out to Americans of all shades and stripes with the urgent message about climate change. Kathy Zoi has just stepped into her new role as CEO of the Alliance for Climate Protection. She, along with Vice President and Oscar nominee Al Gore, has just announced the kickoff of a new campaign called SOS, in this case standing for Save Ourselves. And to help launch this worldwide effort, a series of concerts called Live Earth are scheduled for this summer. Very exciting. We'll be looking forward to hearing about that in just a moment. The rest of our show includes Simran Sethi and Tree Hugger. Today she'll be talking about a radical new staircase that just might energize your home. And in our second half, country singer Adrienne Young put seeds in her CDs. She sings about voting with our food dollars. She's a spokeswoman for Food Routes. That's a national organization that wants to help all of us put more local food onto our table. And finally, why is the U.S. Navy violating California state law? An attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, one of our partners, will tell us how Navy sonar injures and in some cases even kills whales and the lawsuit that may be brewing out in the Pacific. So welcome to the program, and we want to say congratulations and welcome to San Francisco to Kathy Zoi.
Thank you.
You're from the private sector, and you are a specialist in smart metering. It looks like you've come up with some smart messaging for the climate change challenge.
Well, we sure hope so. We sure hope so. I've come back to the United States after being overseas in Australia for 12 years because until we get the United States galvanized about solving the climate crisis, then the world is in bigger trouble than it needs to be.
Absolutely. We're going to get to us, the U.S., in a moment. But just have to ask you about this drought in Australia that we've been mentioning. How severe is that?
Oh, it's quite severe. And, in fact, it's one of the key reasons that the public opinion in Australia has shifted probably sooner than it has in the United States, because it's not just out in the bush where all the food is grown, but also in the cities. Every capital city in Australia is under water restrictions now, and they've been under water restrictions for now a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's very, very serious. So that means every day everybody has a sense of, my goodness, what are we doing to the weather?
So it's a crisis that's still unfolding. We understand that farmers have been committing suicide in some cases because of this lingering, ongoing condition.
Well, it's absolutely tragic. I mean, there have been all sorts of pressures on people in the bush, and the drought has just been literally been the nail in the coffin for many of them, and it's very, very sad.
And we've been having some strange weather here, too. No one storm or tornado or incredibly big snowfall can be attributed to climate change, but it could be that all of it is part of our wacky weather. It seems we're getting more extreme weather conditions, and I do think that's playing a role in getting more Americans to tune into their environment.
Well, that's right. I mean, interestingly, I found that people still refer to it in this country more or less as global warming. That seems to be the common way to refer to it. And I had a journalist this morning, a TV journalist, say, yeah, but, you know, we just had ice storms in New York, so therefore you must agree that global warming is not happening. And I said, well, actually, no. Mm-mm. In most of the rest of the world, we now refer to it as climate change because it's a bit more accurate terminology. But
exactly.
In any case, they are one and the same phenomenon.
And Paul Hawken, the noted environmentalist and author, calls it global weirdness now, just because we're getting a lot of weird weather. So if we can inject a little bit of humor, that's okay. This is very exciting. Save Ourselves campaign. Tell us about that. And is the timing of the Live Earth concert series on 7707 and 7 continents deliberate in terms of the date?
Well, it's obviously a quite a catchy day. It's right near the 4th of July for Americans, so it's a Saturday when a lot of people can participate in it, which is brilliant. The 7 continents, well, and it's interesting. The fellow that we're teaming up with is the successful promoter of Live Aid and a number of around the world global events. He was completely captivated and haunted by Al's movie, The Inconvenient Truth. And he said, look, I've got to do something about it. And he is in this position to help. So this morning in Los Angeles, we launched with some musical talent and with Kevin Wall this round-the-world concert that's going to take place on July 7th on all 7 continents, including live music from Antarctica in the deep, dark bits of winter. So that'll be first time ever that will have happened.
I know you have a list of some pretty big stars here. Melissa Etheridge, who, of course, did the theme song to An Inconvenient Truth. Kelly Clarkson, Bon Jovi, these are all confirmed performers?
Those are all confirmed, you bet. And there'll be more that are very, very interested, that are trying to reorganize their summer holiday schedules so that they can perform. So over the next sort of 4, 6, 8 weeks, we'll be announcing even more acts.
I know Dave Matthews Band, Green Day, and Michael Franti are big on the environment, just to name a few.
Yeah, indeed.
So Save Ourselves, that's brilliant, SOS, because Save the Planet, that battle cry didn't quite take us far enough back in the 1970s, and even Saving the Spotted Owl didn't quite mobilize the masses. But Saving Ourselves, now Americans are, if nothing else, self-interested, as they should be. So might this be the key?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting because it's one of those things that it's our friends in Los Angeles and in Hollywood that said we really need to take this more broadly, because it is about ourselves. And for those of us who have been long involved in watching the science in a very troubling way, we thought, oh, but it is about the whole ecosystem. But it may be right. The messaging may be exactly what we need to ignite everybody across this country and across the globe, because it's correct. It is about saving ourselves.
And it affects everybody, and it will take everybody, the entire global village, to really, I guess the message is, please take your planet more personally. This affects you. As I say, this program is not just for liberals. It's for everyone who eats, breathes, or drinks. And to those who say they're not really an environmentalist, I say, try going one day without your environment, and then we'll talk. So it's really about changing the definitions. And I think that's the hopeful, exciting part of this movement, this new movement, to really get people who would not normally be marching in Austin, Texas, the Baptists now fighting the coal-fired power plants that they're trying to steamroller through. We had them on the program this week, and all kinds of interesting coalitions that are forming. You know, the big corporations, DuPont and GE, Duke Energy, teaming up with environmental organizations like the NRDC. So from the evangelicals to the Baptist, I know the Jews are involved in this. It really is something that we all need to take part in.
Without a doubt. And the Alliance for Climate Protection, our new organization, is going to be, building on the momentum that's created through the concert on July 7th. But we're going to be, working with businesses so that as people walk through their days, they are constantly being provided with information about both the urgency and the solvability of the climate crisis. And that means not just when they sort of turn on the television and see advertisements or see celebrities like Cameron Diaz and Leonardo DiCaprio talking about it, but as well when they go shopping and they are offered a Greenhouse Solutions shopping cart at their favorite retail outlet, and when they're driving down the street and they see billboards, or when they go to church on Sunday, it may even be that the pastor or the congregation leader has gotten interested in it and talks to them about it in that context. As you just pointed out, there are Americans in all walks of life now and across the country geographically who are learning more and realizing that we all have to do something with our purses, with our positions, with our voting, with our politics, to advocate for policies that will get us there.
Absolutely. When I first read about the Alliance right after the movie came out, I think there was something about having a speakers bureau. Are you going to have bipartisan speakers out there, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives out there taking the message perhaps to people who didn't see the movie for whatever reason or read the book?
Well, part of our effort, I mean, as you may know, Vice President Gore has been training climate messengers through his climate project, and that project is part of one of the activities that falls under the umbrella of the Alliance for Climate Protection. And the people that have been trained really do. They come from all walks of life. They, you know, some of them are you know, community leaders, small business people. Cameron Diaz herself went to Nashville and was trained for 3 days in the science of climate and how to communicate it to her own community.
I was there, too, so I know what you're talking about. And you're absolutely right. And I met the most interesting, diverse group of Americans. And I didn't find anyone who actually worked for an environmental organization, per se. So when I heard 1,000 activists, that's more what I expected. And I was pleasantly surprised to see so many different, you know, types of people passionate about this issue and determined to learn more and to spread the green gospel.
That's right. That's what we need. You know, that's what we need.
And so I understand that this training has been taking place in Australia. Is it getting that same kind of response?
Yeah. In fact, Cate Blanchett, you know, in terms of famous names, Cate Blanchett went through the training and she's become kind of the lead climate messenger in Australia.
Okay, we just have a minute left. I'm very pleased that you'll be setting up offices here in the Green Bay Area and also, what, Los Angeles as well?
No. Our headquarters operation for the Alliance will be in the Bay Area. But we will be working, I mean, you know, in this day and age, it matters less where the physical office is and more about where you are engaged in activities. And we will be working, obviously, very closely with our partners in Southern California on the concert. But we will be working with local community-based organizations across the U.S., on activities that take place in communities.
Great. Well, it's very nice to have the Alliance in the neighborhood. Kathy Zoy, CEO of the new Alliance for Climate Protection, talking about the Save Ourselves campaign, also about Live Earth. You'll be hearing more about that. It's going to be a huge concert event happening on 7707. Stay tuned for more. Kathy Zoy, thanks again.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And we'll be back right after these messages.
Do you know a child? If you
win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum.
$1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? You pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
Joni Mitchell, how prophetic she was when she did that song, Don't Know What We Got Till It's Gone. Time now for another edition of Tree Hugger. We're going to check in with our friend Simran Sethi. She's got a story bet will fascinate you. It's about the stairway to green heaven.
Welcome to Tree Hugger Radio. I'm Simran Sethi. As concerns about climate change continue to grow, scientists, engineers, businesses, and individuals are finding ingenious ways to generate energy from renewable resources. Giving new meaning to the term environmental footprint, the British architecture firm The Facility is testing a prototype energy harvesting staircase that will use small embedded hydraulic generators to capture vibration and convert it into electricity. The floors will be installed in London's South Central metro stations, and it's estimated that they'll harvest 3 to 5 watts of energy with each footstep. Meanwhile, an award-winning project conducted by Arizona Public Services and the company Green Fuel has successfully fed the smokestack emissions from a 1,000-megawatt power plant to algae cultures, which turn the carbon-rich emissions into fuel. Once the algae have feasted on the greenhouse gases, their starches are turned into ethanol, their lipids into biodiesel, and proteins fed to livestock or back to the algae. It's estimated that 200 acres of algae would be needed to offset all the power plant emissions. Algae can produce up to 10,000 gallons of oil per acre, grow practically anywhere, and only require the equivalent of 5 centimeters of rain per year. While a host of people contemplate ways to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels and mitigate the effects of climate change, Cameron Sinclair is supporting those who have experienced the devastating effects of climate volatility firsthand. Sinclair is the founder of Architecture for Humanity, a nonprofit dedicated to providing architecture, design services, and funding to global humanitarian crises. The mission is best exemplified by the organization's tagline, "Design Like You Give a Damn." Sinclair's latest endeavor is an open-source design database, a project that sprung from a wish he made after winning the 2006 TED Prize to improve the living standards of 5 billion people.
The TED Prize, which is run by the TED Conference, gives 3 winners one wish to change the world. And you get to stand up in front of about 1,200 people, and you've got 22 minutes to kind of explain who you are, what you've done, and what wish you want to do that you think will make a huge impact. And so our work is really about how can we get designers and architects involved in innovative and sustainable solutions to humanitarian issues.
So what can open source design do about a worldwide housing crisis and the ecological crises of developing nations?
Around the globe, I think a lot of people don't realize that there are designers and architects and innovators who are working in the field of socially conscious design and environmentally conscious design, and they're not connected. There are literally thousands upon thousands of them, but none of them are sharing their ideas and their successes and, most importantly, their failures. So you've got a lot of people replicating work again and again and again. So we wanted to find a system that would allow people to not only generate ideas, implement those ideas, but also share them as well. So this network will allow anyone interested, involved in doing innovative work to post projects, to look at projects, to share them through a Creative Commons licensing system. And so, you know, what we hope is to create a real community that is focused on these issues.
Ingrid Vandehogen of Sun Microsystems explains how the software giant stepped forward to help create the media platform.
The whole idea about the Open Architecture Network was to apply the learnings of an open source model, which is done primarily for software, and take that idea of open sourcing, which is about building communities, making things freely available, removing barriers to copyright and licensing, and having people collaborate in such a way that they can better the designs, get better access for those builders that need to build, and to just take the learnings of technologies and things that we've done in the past and apply it to a whole new set of problems, which is more affordable and efficient and sustainable housing for people around the world.
The Open Architecture Network will come to life on the web this March. For our extended interview with Cameron Sinclair, visit Tree Hugger Radio, now available through the iTunes podcast directory. And for more information on TreeHugger's climate change contest, log on to truths.treehugger.com.
Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Simran. And now a tip from our friends at Nerdy Books, Just the Facts on the Environment Man. Feed the world, eat meat. Tough decision. More than 80% of the corn and 95% of the oats that we grow are fed to livestock. The world's cattle alone consume a quantity of food equal to the caloric needs of 8.7 billion people. That's more than the entire human population on Earth. Roughly 40% of the world's grain is fed to livestock, poultry, or fish, while nearly a billion people go hungry every day. Decreasing our consumption of meat, especially beef, could free up massive quantities of grain while reducing pressure on our land. So I wanted to share that with you. And also want to share with you our gratitude. Those of you who have written letters of appreciation for our program don't want to see us go off the weekday format. We don't either. I really, really appreciate it. It means a lot to us right now as we go through this transition, as Air America goes through this transition. Also want to thank those of you who have been kind enough to write checks, large or small. They're all appreciated, and every single dollar goes into production. So it will keep us on the air another day, another week. Who knows? So just want to acknowledge all of you. Can't find time to write all of you in person, so just let this be my thank you from the bottom of my heart. Along with AM 1320.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me, tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
What is a miracle? A miracle described in the Webster's Dictionary is an extraordinary event manifesting itself in human affairs. You know, each and every day, miracles happen at the UC Davis Children's Hospital. And now, with your help, you can be a part of the miracle process as well. From now through February 24th, when you purchase a 9-piece miracle meal from KFC, $1 goes directly to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. Did you know that the UC Davis Children's Hospital is the region's only pediatric intensive care unit caring for over 60,000 children each and every year? That is why this year the KFC family is proud to have partnered up with the UC Davis Children's Hospital, part of the Children's Miracle Network, to help make sure miracles continue to happen. And now with the help of KFC's Miracle Meal, you can be a part of one too. So do your part and go to a participating KFC for a great meal today and help continue to make miracles happen with the KFC Miracle Meal. For more information on how you can continue to make miracles happen, log on to www.kfcmiraclemeals.com.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
To do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast.
New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready? New rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in Queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
That is a song by our next guest, Adrienne Young. She is a country bluegrass singer, and these days, whenever she's performing with her band, Little Sadie, she's also singing the praises of Food Roots. I'm losing my voice today. I must be going through adolescence, puberty or something. A national organization that aims to put more local-grown food on everyone's table. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Betsy. It's wonderful to be here.
And we're excited about what you're doing to promote Food Roots. Love your music, first of all. What is Food Roots?
Well, the Food Routes Network actually is it's a national nonprofit, and we provide communication tools, technical support, networking, and information resources to folks that are interested anywhere in the country on rebuilding or establishing local community-based food systems. And if you want the official mission statement, The Food Routes Network is dedicated to reintroducing Americans to their food, the seeds it grows from, the farmers who produce it, and the routes that carry it from the fields to their table.
Wonderful. And how did a young country folk singer like yourself get mixed up with a local food activist network?
Well, I've always been extremely inspired by living food and gardening and really just considering myself to be a transcendentalist, having that intimate connection with Mother Earth or God or Gaia or whatever you call your creative spirit, and seeing that in nature all of the lessons I think that are important in life are demonstrated, especially that you know, there is this ongoing life force that comes into something such as a seed and takes it into whatever miraculous form it's destined to be, and there's a cycle in that, and that by eating food that is closest to that cycle in terms of not being processed or generated, then you're actually eating something that's closer to God. So in an attempt to be healthy and realize that my food choices do make a difference to many people, as you can't really do anything without having repercussions throughout the universe, I became very interested in farming and working on farms that were owned by friends of mine and such, and eventually having my own farm. But
noting that, that's probably the sentiment behind one of your lines, which is quoted here, is vote with your dollar for food democracy. So there's it's almost a political aspect to this, even though really it should be practical.
Well, it's spiritual, it's political, it is practical, and it's definitely a consumer-driven society in that, you know, if you have a farm stand next to a McDonald's and you have $5, if you put that $5 into the hands of a multinational conglomerate, then it's really not helping much. If you put that $5 into the hands of that farmer who just brought his precious treasures or her precious treasures from the field, chances are they were grown sustainably, because if you're dealing with local farmers, they're going to tend to treat their land with respect and not try to just sort of pound out what they can of it, but rather look at it as a relationship that's enduring and nurture that soil and treat it as a living organism that it is. And you're also going to be putting that money back into the community by putting it in the hands of that farmer. You're also going to be eating food that is, as I said, closest to its roots. And so you're using little fossil fuels to get that food to your table. You're eating healthy food that has tremendous taste and tremendous nutritional value, and you are strengthening what we like to really feel is high-flying on our banner of purpose, is to establish local food systems so that there was a this word right now that's going around that there's a big buzz about is a food shed, which of course is similar to a watershed in the sense that it's the natural geographic area that encompasses where our food originates and where it travels on its journey to your mouth, actually.
Another word I've heard a lot lately is locavore.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that one. Yes, there's actually
website.
A wonderful book called Coming Home to Eat, The Pleasures and Politics of Local Foods. Gary Nabhan, I believe, is the name. And there are many, many books on local foods, but this one is an experiment where this gentleman said, okay, I'm only going to eat foods that, or drink milk, purchase meat that was raised or grown within a 250-mile radius of my home.
The average food travels about 1,300 miles from farm to table?
Well, it goes the figures generally run 2,500 miles, and if you are one of those persons like myself, unfortunately, who in the middle of January is longing for some dark green vegetables and you neglected to plant the kale in October, then you're probably going to be buying something from California if you're getting organic food. Now, I'm not saying there's something inherently wrong with buying organic greens, it's a blessing that we're able to do so. However, there's no doubt that the fossil fuels used to transport those vegetables from California to where I live in Nashville could have been used to do other it would have been much more practical to have gotten that food from a farmer in my area or to have had it in my backyard.
Hey, there's local greens in Nashville, Al Gore.
Oh, he is marvelous. Gosh, he's just, and I have to say that it's just the dark cloud that I feel that we're coming out of as a nation and therefore a world, I feel has been tragic and certainly a mysterious point in our evolution. But if he had become president, he might not have made that film. And what an amazing film that is.
Absolutely. But my producer tells me I talk about that too much.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, and Sean Hannity called me a Al Gore liberal sycophant or something like that last week when I ventured into enemy territory briefly. So didn't mean to bring up that topic and go in that direction, but
okay, but Sean Hannity
is
a very reactive individual.
I know. We won't go there either.
Okay.
I want to hear more about food routes. Sorry,
okay.
I keep sidetracking you. The website has a great service where you actually show a map of the country and let people know where there's a local farmer's market. And I'm wondering if there's any section of the country that might surprise our listeners to know that there's the biggest dearth of local food markets.
Well, I mean, obviously the West Coast, I mean, California is such an evolved state in terms of walking the walk and people that, you know, consciousness is just sort of a given in that state. And so, therefore, they're very organized, and the farmers markets there are tremendous, all up and down the West Coast, and as well the Northeast. I think the Southeast and the Midwest is where we are hoping to see a lot of growth in the years to come.
You're not only planting seeds, but you actually give away seeds with your CDs?
Well, the first CD, we were so fortunate to be acknowledged, and as it's my own label, called Addie Bell Records, and we have national distribution, but the label is mine, and we received a Grammy nomination with that first record, and in part because those flower seeds created a lot of attention. We put wildflower seeds within every record.
We were discussing before we started, is it record, is it album, or is it a CD? Depends on how old you are. So tell us about your farm-to-schools and farm-to-college programs in the remaining 2 minutes.
Well, the farm-to-school program and farm-to-college is where you incorporate learning processes within the school and incorporate farming into the curriculum and try to get kids out to farms so that they're aware. So many children these days, as they say, think that tomatoes come from the store. And so for children to be able to see the natural cycle and evolution of a seed and the nurturing of that and what it eventually results in and how precious that process is and how practical it is and innate to, you know, to our lives, and that you just putting your hands in the dirt, it takes you to a place that's somewhere we need to get to more often, I think. And so it can be as simple as that, or actually establishing a portion of the cafeteria fare to be only gathered or purchased from local farmers, which is the big goal of the Food Routes Network, is to, at some level, all restaurants and grocery stores to be designating a portion to local farms.
Adrian, we need to get to a commercial break. I want to thank you for your music and your great works. Adrian Young, a country bluegrass singer. Her new CD is coming out in May, Room to Grow. And you're hearing music now from another CD, Hills and Hollers.
May I just offer our website?
Yes.
Okay. It's foodroutesnetwork.org, R-O-U-T-E-S, foodroutesnetwork.org. And mine is adrianyoung.com. Thank you for what you do, Betsy.
Thank you. And we'll put a link on our website, which you can find at www.ecotalk.net. Stay with us. Next up, the rights of whales for a safe marine environment versus the U.S. Navy's right to conduct sonar testing in the name of national security.
stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth, AM 1320.
Well, I feel like a stranger in my own hometown.
And welcome back to the program. And we're going to go underwater and look at the controversy over the Navy's use of sonar and how that impacts marine mammals, specifically whales. Whose laws preside over U.S. coastlines anyway? State laws, federal laws, maritime laws, military, utility, what should take precedent? Over the last several years, that question of just which laws do rule over others have been at the heart of many environmental disputes. A great group called Seaflow works on that. That's their primary issue. NRDC, our partner, also does a lot of work on it. Earlier this week, things came to a head in the Pacific Ocean, where the Navy has overridden California state laws intended to protect whales and other marine mammals. The Natural Resources Defense Council has said that they will sue the Navy if California State's Coastal Commission does not. Today, Kara Horowitz from the NRDC's Marine Mammal Protection Program joins us for comment. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, first of all, what kind of precedents are there for this type of disagreement between the military and state laws?
Well, it's important to note that for many, many years, in fact, for decades, states around the country, including California, have acted against those who undertake activities in state coastal waters or even outside state coastal waters, if those activities affect the waters and, you know, marine mammals and the creatures in those waters, to prevent harm to coastal zones. For many years, for example, California has regulated the oil and gas industry, other industries, and even the Navy itself in waters both sort of in and near the California coastal zone to work to protect those coastal resources, to protect whales, to protect fish, and to protect other coastal resources that are so vital to California's economy. So that's the precedent against which the Navy is acting this week.
So they said that they're just not going to comply with the commission. They're going to ignore it, can they, legally?
Yeah, so earlier in January, the Coastal Commission took a look at some upcoming Navy activities. The Navy proposed to use high-intensity military sonar in and near California coastal waters. The commission took a look at this and said, you know what, in order to be consistent with our coastal resources, in order not to harm our marine mammals and fish and other coastal resources, the Navy has to take a series of common sense measures to protect whales and other creatures when it trains with sonar off of California. And the Navy has said no dice. Basically, the Navy has issued a broad refusal, not just to protect whales, but also a refusal of the Coastal Commission's very authority in these matters. Whether or not it can do so will likely be the subject of litigation, but we take the strong view that California's historic authority here still stands.
So the only thing they agreed to, I understand, is that they will submit any monitoring reports to the commission, and, of course, they could write up whatever they want.
Yeah, that's right. The Navy has agreed to submit monitoring reports to the commission concerning its sonar uses off of California and some of its effects that it sees on coastal resources off of California.
Are you confident that will be a full and honest declaration of what happens?
Well, in some ways, I think it's beside the point. California had attempted to get the Navy to take a series of, like I said, very common-sense measures when it trains to protect marine life that would do much more than simply issuing reports to ensure that when the Navy trains, it's not harming whales and other creatures.
And how can they be sure? How can we measure sonar harm in whales?
Yeah, that's a good question. So at this point, there's essentially no scientific dispute that sonar training kills and injures whales. Whales have stranded around the world in association with Navy sonar training in places as remote and as near as North Carolina, Washington State, Greece, the Canary Islands, Japan. But often scientists worry about effects that are much more subtle than strandings and maybe sometimes harder to detect than mass whale strandings, because whales and other sea creatures depend so much on sound for some of their vital life functions, like feeding and avoiding predators and migrating, that when you start inundating their world with very, very loud sounds, you really interfere with those basic life functions in ways that might be hard to measure but might be quite significant.
Now, I read that the Navy has acknowledged that sonar, in fact, can contribute to the injury or even death of whales, so I suppose they're justifying using sonar in the name of national security?
That's right. The thing is, nobody's asking them not to use the sonar. The steps that the Coastal Commission had asked them to take were, for example, steps like avoiding key whale habitat. Out here in Southern California, we have the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary.
That would make sense. It's a big ocean out there.
Yeah, which is, you know, one of the most beautiful and most robust and diverse marine areas off of California. And in our view and in the Coastal Commission's view, it just simply doesn't make sense for the Navy to be training there when it can go elsewhere. That's the kind of measure that the Navy has refused to adopt.
I visited a marine sanctuary down in the Channel Islands, so I assume they're not right there.
Well, I don't think you can make that assumption. That's exactly the marine sanctuary I'm talking about.
Mm.
And the Coastal Commission asked them not to train in that sanctuary, and the Navy has refused to take that step.
Wow.
So that only leads one to conclude that the Navy is there.
Well, then why designate something a sanctuary?
That is exactly your point.
Okay. So what is your next move?
Well, at this point, we're waiting to see what the Coastal Commission is going to do to protect its jurisdiction and authority in these matters. As I understand it, the Coastal Commission is voting either today or tomorrow about whether to take the Navy to court itself. If it does, NRDC is certainly going to be right there with it to help it protect, as I said, its authority to safeguard our coasts. And if the Coastal Commission decides not to sue itself, NRDC will seriously consider bringing that lawsuit.
And you said that you're not asking them to stop using sonar. Is that the only technology or the best technology that is available for this testing purpose?
Yeah, the Navy uses sonar to detect enemy submarines. And
do we have a lot of those coming in these days?
You know, of course, all of that information is classified. But, you know, NRDC tends not to get into fights with the Navy about whether or not it really needs this technology. Of course, they're the experts, and so we wouldn't challenge them in that area. But really our point is that when it practices with sonar, when it's simply training to train its soldiers, you know, its men and women about how to use the stuff, it might as well do so in places where it will cause less environmental harm.
Well said. Well put. Anything our listeners should know or if they want to find out more about this issue?
Well, I encourage them to go to our website, www.nrdc.org, and to get involved with the fight. I think the more people realize, you know, what the Navy is doing in this area, the more outraged they'll be.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for bringing us up to date. That is the Natural Resources Defense Council's Kara Horowitz. She is with the organization's Marine Mammal Protection Program, and we'll be putting a link up on our website. You can find that at www.ecotalk.net. And I want to take a moment to tell our listeners about the podcast that you can get. If you go to our website and just sign up, it says sign up, there's a button there, you will get Feed Blitz. That's a service that doesn't cost you anything. I don't think it even costs us anything, so it's a wonderful service. And they will put in your inbox every day the show that we do here on the radio, and you can listen at your own leisure online whenever you like. So I want to mention that. I always forget about it because I'm not quite at the podcast stage yet. So if you'd like to listen to any of the programs that you might have missed or any of the segments you might have joined us partway through, just want to remind you to join up on our website and also to stay with us. We are going to bring you the very most important stories, the very biggest environmental stories out there. Every day, just want you to know what we do. We check the newspapers. We check the wires. I have so many people pitching me with great green products and programs every day in my inbox. I guess that's one of the benefits, although sometimes it's hard to get through and it doesn't feel like such a gift, of doing this beat for 10 years. So you can be sure that when you hear our program, it is what we consider to be the top stories. And if not, then we'll get authors who are coming through town. We try to give you a mix of sort of the hard scientific news. Sometimes it's a bit grim. And we try to combine that with features that tell you what you can do to live lighter on the planet. And we even try to use a little bit of comedy when we can, because after all, the way our world's going, sometimes it can get a little bit serious. So we hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll see you next time.
theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate.